Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life, there's no surrender. There's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Play the song, because when we first began, most of the
folks who listen in, or a lot of them, were either Newt Gingrich supporters or Ron Paul supporters, and we really felt like we had to walk lockstep with each other in order to fight for conservatism, especially with what the RNC was doing, in order to prop up and ensure Mitt Romney the nomination. And, of course, part of that is by what they did with Rule 40 and how unhappy people, including Sarah Palin was about that. And I really feel that Rule 40 was definitely one of the roadblocks that was put away for to keep the grassroots candidates such like Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul from getting a chance at a brokered convention so that either one of them could get the nomination. Of course, we've actually, if you look at the history of the Republican Party, that most of the time, or a lot of the times, that when you had a brokered convention, the nominee actually went on to win the presidency. And then the opposite is also true, where when you did not have a brokered convention, the Republican nominee lost in the general election. I see some folks in the chat. I see Mary. And, you know, if you'd like to chime in, we'd like to hear from you. I haven't heard from you for a while, so it'd be great if you want to call in, feel free. But we will begin by, excuse me, thanking everyone once again for coming. Whether you were coming from Blog Talk Radio or coming from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website at www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. or some of the other venues that the show has been listened to, or if you're listening here now on the archives after the show has been recorded, thank you very much for coming. Now, tonight we will be discussing RNC Rules 12 of 14 and the question, will they stay? I know there's been some battles against those, as well as looking at Rule 16. And tonight, we will have the vice chairman of the Nevada Republican Party, James Smack, on to discuss his memorandum explaining his support for Rince Priebus for the RNC chair. And we'll also talk about with him RNC Rules 12 and 40. And later on, we'll also have a couple of folks on as well. And that would be Nicole Revels, I believe, is going to be calling in. And she's an agitator for the Carolina Liberty PAC. And we may also have Chuck come in from the, I believe, I'm having a brain freeze here. I apologize. Constitutionalwar.org. There we go. That's Chuck Souter. And perhaps someone who was helping Mark Willis to try to get the nomination from Rince Priebus. We may have a Brian Daugherty, who was really helpful in Mark's attempt at getting that. We may well have him call in tonight, so we're all looking forward to that, I am sure. So we look forward to hearing from him. So, and I do see Brian in the chat. Thank you very much. And, of course, as always, people who just did sign into the chat are more than welcome to participate, and I will try to get back there and bring some things up that's heard in the chat as well. So thank you very much. And for the guests, if you'd like to chime in on the chat, just sign in. Find a way to sign in with a handle, with a name, and it will allow you to be on the chat. And the call-in number tonight, for those who do not have it, is 347-945-7428. And we're welcome to have people call in and chime in about the topic. But, of course, we will, when the other guests come in tonight, as well as James Smack calls in, we will open up the floor for them as well. And yes, I see in the chat here, Mary, I love that song, So Do I, as I reiterate for the folks who are just now starting to file in, you know, or start to listen, as we play that song a lot, excuse me, during the primaries, you know, when I was, you know, fighting for a nomination for Newt Gingrich and then later on for Ron Paul. Now, one of the things we were talking about, well, which I think would be a phenomenal ticket, is, would have been a Gingrich-Paul ticket. I think that would have been a very principled ticket, because both of those gentlemen have stuck by their principles you know, throughout their career. Now, you know, I know people might contest that with some of Gingrich's, but I think when what he did in his career is explored, then you'll see that he has been consistent throughout his career. And I truly believe in, I like to mimic something, a friend of mine, Mark Prasik, who is actually the purveyor of the www.patriotjournalist.com. People check that out. As he said, that he believes that by Newt Gingrich, excuse me, not being the president, that the country, I really do agree with this, could have possibly lost a national treasure and the chance of having him in there. Now, of course, you know, Ron Paul would have been good as well, but I, you know, I've always been honest here that I've always been a Newt Gingrich supporter. We'll see what happens in the future, see what happens with the Republican Party, and that's something we are going to talk about tonight. We did talk about last night is what the future of the Republican Party would be if they were to push aside the conservatives and the grassroots of the party. And, of course, folks can listen to that show from the archives, as well as the other shows that we've had. And also you could go to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website and go to the special guest page, and there will be some direct links with some of the folks that we've had on, including recently we've had the composer of the music for the TV show Bones on. That's so people check that out. You can find a link directly to that show either through Blog Talk Radio or Bard's Logic Political Talk website. We've also interviewed people from a organization I like to support, and that is the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. So you can listen to that show as well as find a link where you can go to the organization and adopt or sponsor, pretty much same thing, a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And so I think it's a great organization there. So let me go back to the chat and, you know, say hello. Just, okay, great, answered that question. So we go on what I'd like to talk, you know, about Rule 40, and, you know, we're trying to make, you know, more, I have to have the plurality of more states from 5 to, I believe, 8 more states in order to be able to be able to get the nomination or even qualify to try to get a nomination. I want to talk a little bit more about that. We'll, you know, talk at more length with our guests call in as well. But I really think it was a part of the power grab in order for the RNC to really control who is, this isn't something that many of us don't already know, get control of who they decide, not the people decide, who is going to be the nominee for the Republican Party, which we've always seen that when the party, it's, you know, the party actually picks instead of the people pick, we see what happens in the election. And that's something we said along in a lot of the shows is Mitt Romney could not win. I mean, I knew it, and I'm not trying to do what I told you so. But there has not been a moderate Republican to win a general election in over 40 years. But I think that the Republican Party really thought this time that they could do it, that they could actually put the rhino in there. They've been trying to do it for quite some time. The establishment never even liked Ronald Reagan. And I do see someone call in. I'll open up your mic very shortly. And, you know, so just to finish my point is that the establishment never even liked Ronald Reagan. I think that's why there was such a push against the Ron Paul movement, or Ron Paul nomination, and the Newt Gingrich, because they definitely would have changed Washington. They actually would have been small government, unlike what it appears the Republican Party is going towards now. And so without any further ado, I do see a couple people with their wanting to put the mics on. So here we go. And now I believe we have Chuck and
yes,
Nicole.
Sir, I'm here.
Hi, Chuck. Welcome to the show. And that's you too, Nicole? Or?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, great. Yeah, I don't memorize phone numbers too often, even the area code, so I want to make sure I got them correctly. So thank you very much and welcome to the show.
Well, absolutely, man. I would just agree with everything that you were saying there. You know, obviously there was a very concise, concerted effort to stop both Paul and Newt, and you know, Ron Paul and Newt didn't have any other choice but to attack each other somewhat during the campaign to try to take that the second place position to be the challenger to Mitt Romney, because the whole primary was set up from the very get-go. Why did Florida get to move up? Well, Florida got to move up so that Mitt Romney could get the nomination. The whole plan the whole time was, it was an obvious plan. And Mitt Romney was going to be the chosen boy, and there was no doubt about it.
Definitely. Nicole?
Yeah, with the Rule 40, I mean, it's clear that, you know, they were just scared to death when it actually looked like Ron Paul qualified for the nomination. And another thing about that is so frustrating is there were interviews, I think maybe it was a We Are Change group or some organization like that, that had approached Wright Priebus, and they got an interview and they were able to ask him why he claims that they did not receive Ron Paul's paperwork as well, because he had to actually turn in paperwork applying to be eligible for nomination, and he turned his paperwork in plenty of time. They said that they didn't receive it; it was, you know, lost in the mail or something. That was just another step that they took to just really trample all over the grassroots. And then with this Rule 40, which I'm sure, you know, that's something that's very close, near and dear to Brian's heart, that, you know, maybe he can talk more about when he calls in, but because it was specifically aimed at them and their state, but changing it from, and I actually have my rule book sitting right here in front of me, that changing it to 8 states, I mean, that is obviously an unattainable goal, and if we don't get that fixed, then we're going to have some real problems.
Right, because I mean, you're talking about someone. You know, you have five. Let's say you have five candidates, like you did, you know, this time around, and you go from five. That's, you know, 10% of the states, and then you move it up to 8. You know, that's definitely even a higher percentage. And if you have five candidates, especially if they do stay in for a longer haul, and I think that, you know, this time around we really did see, you know, a lot of the candidates stay around longer than we have seen in previous. The previous primaries, which I think shows how important this election was. So, but yeah, but to move that up, and as you said, they definitely were afraid that, you know, Ron Paul could possibly get it. And I believe, you know, in the earlier stages, Newt Gingrich as well, trying to keep him, you know, back. And then you also had, and I want to mention on what Chuck was talking about Romney being from the get-go. I mean, even Fox News was kind of touting that Romney was the only person who could beat Obama, which we all know was the exact opposite of what the real truth was. I mean, Romney was the worst candidate to go up against. I mean, he was probably the worst. I think, you know, Michelle Bachmann or Rick Santorum or even Herman Cain, you know, and I'm not blasting any of them, but I think even they would have had a better shot at beating Obama than Romney for a plethora of reasons.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. You know, it's like if, you know, you're sick and tired of the vehicle that you're driving around. You don't go out and just get the exact same vehicle in a different color. And that's exactly what elected Mitt Romney would have been. I mean, obviously he would have, I think there is a lot of truth to him. He would have been somewhat better than Obama. I will give the guy that. How much better is, I don't think it'd be worth going out and voting, and neither did the American, neither did the population. If Mitt Romney could have got the same total of votes that John McCain had in 2008, he would have won the election. Obama actually got less votes, but Romney got significantly less votes than John McCain. And that's what the problem is. You know, there was, I was a Ron Paul supporter, but at the same time, there was no question going into that convention that Mitt Romney was going to come away with the nomination. There was no doubt about it. What they were worried about, and the reason they changed the rules, was because they didn't want conservative principles to be able to be jammed down their establishment gullets. They didn't want the party's platform to, obviously be against some of the Agenda 21, the Second Amendment protection things that wanted to get pushed in there, more pro-life things. They did not want that. They want, Limbaugh. I don't disagree with Rush Limbaugh all the time. I catch all kinds of flack for listening to Limbaugh all day long, every day, 5 days a week. I even listen to his weekly review if I'm working on Saturday. And how do you listen to Limbaugh? Oh, he sells us out every time. I'm not saying that Limbaugh is perfect, but Limbaugh does get a few things right that he repeats over and over, and they're very legitimate things. Look, they don't want you. They're tired of you hicks and you hayseeds. And, now Karl Rove, Limbaugh's had on his show, and who Limbaugh has defended, is now coming out saying exactly that. So that's what they wanted to stop. They weren't worried Ron Paul was going to get the nomination. Nobody in their right mind thought that. There were some delusional Ron Paul supporters that thought a miracle was going to happen. But no, most of us that are, active and know what's going on and understand the political process, we had no illusions that Ron Paul was going to get the nomination. That's not why we went to Tampa. That's not why we fought to get our delegates seated. It's very clear. They can spin it how they want, but it even backfired on them. And Rush Limbaugh, Michelle Malkin, and many other folks that you wouldn't normally see standing up for, Ron Paul, were standing up against these rules changes, because these rule changes are the worst thing to happen to conservative politics in this country in my lifetime, I believe.
Yeah, and speaking of, them wanting to, stop conservatism, is, I would say that when Newt Gingrich was Speaker of the House, that the Contract of America, that was a pretty conservative deal. And I'm not trying to beat a dead horse here. I got a 34-second clip here, and then 207 I see on the line. I'll be opening up your mic, and I believe that is Brian. So I'm going to play this, and this is what Romney had to say about the Contract with America.
Let me tell you, in my view, it is not a good idea to go into a contract like what was organized by the Republican Party in Washington, laying out a whole series of things which the party said, these are the things we're going to do. I think that's a mistake. I think instead that if you want to get something done in Washington, you don't end up picking teams with Republicans on one side and Democrats on the other, entering into a contract and saying, okay, we're all going to do this, and then, of course, that works, then the other side feels like they're the loser. But if it wins, they feel like the winner. I don't like winners and losers in Washington. I'd rather say let's get together and work together.
Let's not give in to the Democrats.
Hogwash. Absolute hogwash. The man, his whole life he spent picking winners and losers, and I applaud him for that. And I'm glad that, I think one of the things Newt used against Romney that I think is a very smart political move for Newt to make, but principally I disagree with him. Romney did the right thing when he was in business. He picked winners and losers all day long, and that's the way our government needs to be run, because people can criticize running our government like a business. Well, look, it'd be a lot better than the way it's being run right now. We need to pick winners and losers. We need to say, your ideas are wrong. We don't need bipartisan shit. We're going to force the right idea on you with the power of the American people behind us, and we're going to demand a budget. Not let's compromise. You can give us part of a budget or something. Are you kidding me? The Democrats? This is what's ridiculous about guys like Romney. There is no way in the world the Democrats are ever going to come to the Republicans when the Democrats hold the power, and the Democrats are going to come and say, hey, let's work together, guys.
And at that, and then I'm gonna bring in 207. I believe that's Brian. And then open his mic and then go ahead. And then we'll bring it over to Nicole after Brian. Okay.
Hey,
Brian, is
hey
that
guys,
you? Open up the mic.
On?
Hey, how's it going? How are you? Thank you for calling into the show.
Yeah, no problem. Man, it's great to hear Chuck and Nicole's voice. I was with them not long ago, so I want to say hello to those guys and. Good to talk to you again, Robert.
Thank you. You too.
I kind of missed part of what you guys were talking about there, so I'm not exactly sure where we're at.
Well, what we were just talking about, the rules change, and then the clip was played about Romney saying that he doesn't want to pick winners and losers, and obviously that is the wrong policy in business, and it's the wrong policy in government. You don't want to be bipartisan on every last thing. There's too much bipartisanship. If the Republicans don't have the right idea and the Democrats do, I don't know when that's going to happen, but then the American people need to get behind what the Democrats are doing and tell the Republicans to go pound sand. So that's pretty much the gist of it. But I think Nicole just brought up the point. She said, good seeing you, but she's still sick, man. That main flu or whatever you guys have.
Yeah.
You brought
Yeah, I said I'm still fighting that, believe it or not. But, picking winners and losers, you know, I think that's best left stuff to the people that are actually participating in the vote. You know, I would like to see more educated people vote or at least take the time to really investigate the person that they're voting for. I was kind of disturbed when I was in North Carolina that you guys have push-button voting to where you can just vote a whole Republican ticket or a whole Democrat ticket. I think in this time in our political landscape that we have to take a step back and really look at the individuals that we're electing. I mean, I would like to say that every Republican has, you know, the backbone to, you know, fight for our platform. But, you know, until there's some adherence to our platform, well, you know, anything can be co-opted, whether it's a small faction or whether it's an entire party. And I just see with, you know, everybody kicking out conservatives, no matter whether it's on a congressional committee, whether it's in, you know, some state committee, county committee, municipal committee, you know, it's disturbing. So you have to wonder, you know, if Karl Rove can declare war on conservatives and then start a new pack and attack her. You know, we have to really look at it. You know, we're fighting a battle on two fronts, and it might be the same enemy.
Go ahead, and then Nicole, if you'd like to chime in, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree that if, you know, here in North Carolina, what Brian was talking about, in a presidential election, you do have to pick who you're going to vote for president. But after you decide who you're going to vote for president, you can also say, okay, I'm a Republican, I'm voting for Mitt Romney. Then you can push the button for Mitt Romney, and then right below it, it'll say, do you want to vote straight party ticket? And then you can vote for every Republican that's on the ballot. The only thing that you will have to go and select individually are school board and judges. So you will have to know what you're doing there. Unfortunately, the Democrats were really good at beating us at that game, and that's how they did pretty well with the school board. They weren't able to do as well with the judges, and we were actually able to I don't know if we took over the Supreme Court or we held on to our power in the Supreme Court. I'm not really sure on that, but I agree completely. I think straight party ticket voting is bad for politics. It's bad for our country. It's something that should be done away with. I'll be honest with you. I've never voted for a Democrat, but I would. I would vote for a Democrat if it was the right Democrat. I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I have voted for a few libertarians and a few independents, and I've abstained from voting for many Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am a Republican, and a Ron Paul Republican, a Liberty Republican, but I'm a Republican, and I've never pulled straight ticket, but I've thought about it in the past. Usually it was only like one bad apple that kept me from doing it, but a lot of people aren't as involved as me, so they're not going to know about that one bad apple, and that one bad apple is going to get in there because of something like straight ticket voting.
Right. Well, I think once I voted for a Democrat, and that's because I knew him and his family, but later to regret it because he was supposed to be a conservative Democrat, but then, really was just end up towing the party line. And then this past election, locally and nationally, I voted for, Constitution Party. There was one Republican I voted for. There was a Libertarian I voted for. And there was a Green Party candidate that I voted for. So, I voted for different ones.
What I was trying to point out was that, for the voter to go to that booth and make an educated choice, I mean, for most part, they are just either we made it too easy for, tyranny to really make the vote worth nothing, and that's if you think that, there's no meddling with some of these electronic voting machines,
mm-hmm.
I mean? But I mean, if you're just looking at as the pure stance of your vote counts for sure, that there's no meddling down the line one way or another, that, you want that person to be able to go in there, look at the candidate, and understand the issues and the policies that, risen to the champion to be champions of, and make that choice from there. One of the things I think is interesting would be to see what an election would look like, the results would look like, if you took the party affiliations away from the ballot. And how the people would adjust to that, and whether even some people would even know the names of the people that they're voting for.
Mm-hmm. And Nicole, what I hear from you, so let's defer to the lady in the room.
Yeah, with our free ticket voting, that's definitely just another element that feeds into the two-party stranglehold that is happening here in North Carolina and prevents third parties from gaining traction. It makes it easy for people to feel like they don't need to research because,
mm-hmm.
And that's one thing that I hear our candidate for vice chairman, Glenn Bradley, even though he's running for vice chairman of the Republican Party, he goes around telling people, don't just assume that your legislator is good because they're a Republican. You need to look at their record on these things and see what they're doing. And, I guess we have a lot of work to do in kind of drilling that element or making it more mainstream for folks to do their research. I know when I was doing call lists for the general election, that's what I was told to do. I was told to tell people, make sure you vote straight ticket Republican. And, of course, I didn't do that. I just called and, talked about the things for specific candidates that I really liked that I knew were good points. But as far as what you guys were just discussing about all the grassroots being disenfranchised from the party, I think we also need to be strategic in how we deal with that. While we have to work within the two-party system, especially in states like ours, but something that Chuck and I were even talking about earlier was with certain situations, like with the gentleman Todd that was on last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he is going to have to wait another year before he can reapply for his eligibility within his county party. But at the same time, if we work to really promote these situations, or not promote, but just give them a lot of attention, then it kind of sets an example, hopefully, for other counties that they don't want to make a martyr out of somebody, you know. They don't want to, like, have all this level of criticism come down on them. So that's one element that maybe we can do to prevent county parties from engaging in this kind of behavior, set an example of those that are. And I was actually reading just a little bit ago a success story out of it was a state central committee election in Minnesota. And I'm not sure exactly what area of Minnesota it is, but one of the, like, outspoken liberty folks who was, I believe, a delegate in Tampa for Ron Paul, they had a success tonight because out there, I guess the nominating committee has to put you on the ballot if you want to apply for these party positions. And they were trying to invoke some excuses to prevent this guy from being eligible to be on the ballot. And so he had several people there who supported him, who wanted to vote for him and wanted him to be on the ballot. So what they did at their convention was they refused to adopt the rules for the convention unless they allowed this individual to be placed on the ballot, and they had the majority. So the party couldn't adopt their rules. They couldn't go on unless they allowed this man to be on the ballot. And so they did. They put him on the ballot, and now he was voted in, and he's a state central committee member. So we really have to rally up our troops. And I look to these examples with such optimism for the things that we can do and lessons that we can learn on how we can apply that.
Oh, exactly. I would just, you know, chomping at the bit here to jump in on what Nicole's saying.
Sure, go ahead.
Like Ronald Reagan said, you know, speak softly and carry an AR-15. I mean, carry a stick. And that's exactly right. That's what we were talking about earlier. And Todd Daniel Welch, if anybody's out there from Minnesota, he needs your support up there. I think it's Dunn County, Minnesota, mm-hmm. Republican Party that
now
refused his membership.
I thought he's from Wisconsin.
I'm sorry, not
Dunn County, Wisconsin.
Yes, Dunn County, Wisconsin, the big cheese state up there where Rince Priebus is from, who said he didn't want to kick out the grassroots. So maybe there's pressure that can be applied there. But exactly, that's why his situation is so important to me, that I want to get him on every radio show I can get him on and try to get people to get active because, you know, when they came for Todd, nobody stood up. You know the rest of the story. When they got to me, there was no one left to stand up. And if we can the only way you're going to have any success in politics is to cause politicians political pain. If you cause them pain, they even if you lose, this is the thing, people don't understand how you win by losing. When you cause them pain and you fight against them, like Mark Willis and his valiant effort there to, just to get a nominating speech, really. I mean, we wanted to win that thing. There's no doubt we wanted to. Everything would have had to, the heavens would have had to align. The stars would have had to been in the right spot for that. It wasn't very likely. But that fight is the reason that Priebus probably gave me that interview, probably the reason that he was doing everything he could to come talk to the grassroots and thanking everybody. There's so many ways to play in politics. Like I think we might have talked about it on your show.
you know, Mark and Ashley, the committee men and women from Maine, are the only two that didn't vote for Chairman Priebus. And then when everybody else was up for election, all the other elections that were there, it was all unanimous. It was all unanimous. So Rim had to walk around for the rest of the convention realizing that, you know, there was other people that wanted to vote against him, but two people did vote against him, and everything else was unanimous. That's pressure. Now he realizes, hey, we're going to do the April rules meeting. Because you're causing him political pain. He doesn't know what – he probably wants to run again in 2 years for chairman. Well, does it matter that much to shut out the grassroots, or do I want to be chairman? You've got to play to people's emotions. You've got to play to their own self-interests. And there's no better way to do it than supporting somebody like Todd. And any time a situation arises like that, you've got to say, hey, do you guys want to make this person that you just kicked out of the Republican Party a well-known, superstar in your state? Do you want to, if you make him a martyr, a political martyr, then you're going to have to now – we've got this grassroots Tea Party, Liberty Movement, Ron Paulers, Newt Gingrich guys, Santorum guys that are all coming together, and we're going to support this guy so that we can keep this a bottom-up party. And some of you guys might be sitting at home from now on.
And I just want to chime in real quick as two things. One is we are due for Vice Chairman to be coming in, James Smack, in about 20 minutes, maybe less. He said he's going to try to come in a little earlier than 11 p.m. Eastern time. But also, I see, Brian, that – so I just want to tell the folks that, you know, we are still expecting him in, and he did say he would come in towards the second half of the show, and which, you know, will be about 15 minutes, maybe a little earlier, if he's able to call in earlier, as he said he hoped. But also I see, Brian, in the chat, you put in a link for Bill Paulson for chair. And before James Smack comes in, I would like to go ahead and talk about that for a little bit.
Sure. I met, actually, Bill twice, the second time being down in North Carolina. He actually contributed a little bit of time and effort there to help Mark out, and I got to, you know, talk to him for a bit, and he had never brought up the fact that he was running for chair back in Minnesota, so I thought it was pretty interesting when I got back home and I saw that he had finally announced. And from what I know of him and from what I know of his, you know, history with the rules fight, I mean, this is the type of people that we want as our state chair, for sure. You know, I think he has a lot to offer, and I would, you know, offer anybody up to go and take a moment and investigate at least through his Facebook page. I know he's easy to contact, and you can chat with him. And definitely, if you can help support him in any way, you know, I would, especially if you're out in Minnesota, you know, this is somebody you definitely want to take a look at.
And Nicole, you know, as I put in a chat here for Facebook, you also were talking about Bill Paulson.
Yes. Well, when we were in Tampa, the North Carolina delegation was in the same delegation hotel as the Minnesotans, and so I got to know some of the Minnesota Liberty folks pretty well, and then I did see him again in Charlotte. And so, you know, I had mentioned to you his chair run just so that you would be familiar with it. And now I have had some conversations with him about the rules and the upcoming situation in April. Minnesota, they have their chair race. I think it's about a week or so before the next RNC rules committee, or the next RNC meeting in April. And so Minnesota, they passed, I believe, and Brian might be more familiar with this, but they had, were one of the states who passed a resolution in opposition to the rule changes stating that they were in favor of reverting back to the 2008 rule.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that we're, you know, looking forward to hopefully having a coalition with them at the April meeting.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen the wording to that resolution yet. I believe, you know, from speaking to a few people that were out there working on it, it was pretty much the same thing from the resolution we passed here in Maine. So I'm not sure as far as, you know, the strong language in the beginning, but I'm pretty sure all the resolve was the same. So it's good to know that they passed that. And, you know, I know there's a number of other states as soon as, you know, New Hampshire had come out with one, and, you know, North Carolina and Texas, and they all had different versions there. But if we can get a number of states to pass that, I really think they have to take a hard look at it. I'm really interested in talking with Mr. Smack tonight just to try to figure out, you know, I think that you, when you approach the situation, you have to really tread carefully, because the moment that you start tinkering with the fact that you're going to use one rule to fix the others, you've just validated what has happened in one shape or form. And then, you know, if you don't get your way to try to nullify that, you know, I know that's a very difficult feat, as he has mentioned, but I think that, you know, at some point you got to take the pie in the face and, you know, call spade a spade and say, at best, you know, there should have been division recognized and, you know, some type of floor vote, and then go from there. So, you know, at this point we'll have to go back, you know, some way, somehow, we're going to have to find a way to go back to the 2008-2010 amended rule.
I agree, and I've, you know, heard some things about and read some things about that, and we'll definitely hopefully touch base more on that with Mr. Smack when he comes in. But if you'd like to chime in on anything you've heard there, Chuck, go ahead.
Well, absolutely. I don't think that we can save the party by getting rid of Rule 16. And I don't think that you're going to – I think what's going to happen is if the only thing that we can do is get rid of Rule 16,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have a grassroots that is ready for another party. Look,
I agree.
As a Ron Paul guy, you would, you know, the image that people have of Ron Paul supporters is some of it is deserved. First of all, let me say that some of it is deserved.
Hold on, Chuck. Before you finish that thought, and excuse me for interrupting you, but just let's take that name, Ron Paul, and let's just use Ronald Reagan at this point, because if these rules were in effect with Ronald Reagan, there would not have been, we would have not had Ronald Reagan as president. That's guaranteed. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and I think it's easier for people to recognize, you know, and associate themselves with, you know, with Ronald Reagan. And not that I have anything against Dr. Paul, but I think, you know, for the most part, we use these terms over and over, and they sort of tend to have the opposite effect of what we really would like. You know, when we say, you know, liberty-minded, and I'm just as guilty as everybody else of doing it, and I think it's these labels that really isolate us from, we build our own barriers, and so I think it's important that we sort of open those barriers in everything that we do, and at the same token, know that we have to, you know, reach out, trust, but verify, and actions speak louder than words. So, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. I just figure if we look at it as, you know, from that standpoint, we're better off trying to find more individuals that will be able to, you know, adhere to some of those even libertarian principles that Reagan espoused.
And real quick before you chime in, I'm going to try back in, Chuck. I do have a question here straight from the chat here. And thank you very much, Michelle, for your input to the chat and your participation. And she's asking, is that to say you think that the party can still be saved? So if you can answer that, and then we'll go back to what we were discussing. Go ahead, Chuck. If you can answer that for her.
Yes, I do think the party can still be saved, and I think it's a very simple process that could take place. It's going to take a lot of work because, let's face it, we've been asleep at the wheel. I haven't been doing as much as I should have been the past, 10 years. I'm only 31 years old, but I could have been doing a lot more. I really... I've always looked at it from the aspect, as most Americans do, when somebody gets into the primary, all we've got to do is have the person with the best message is what's going to lead the way, and then we'll vote for them for president, and Washington, D.C. is going to take care of us. We have got to break that mindset, no matter who you support. And Brian makes a great point, and I'll get to that in a second. But no matter who you supported, Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, whoever it was, you can't just support them when they're running for the presidency. You also have to support their ideas of more conservatism, of localized government, state government issues. We've got a lot of issues out there that we all agree on, but when it comes to that national stage, that's where we're going to have our disagreements, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's completely fine. But let's work together as a unified front, get those things taken care of, and then we can debate each other all day long about the rest of what's going on. And as far as what Brian was saying, I agree. I think the best analogy that could possibly be made that most people can relate to is that Ronald Reagan would have never become president in today's Republican Party. And Ronald Reagan was, I dare say, and I apologize to anybody who I offend, I don't think that he was as conservative as Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul. He raised taxes. He did other things neither one of those guys. I don't believe that they would that they would have done.
Well, and that's definitely I've definitely heard that before on the show, and I have to agree with that. I mean, I love Ronald Reagan, and it's actually Ronald Reagan that got me interested in politics back when I was 10 years old. Now I'm not trying to get my age now, but. Just kidding, guys.
Hey, me too, man. Me too. My father raised me on Reagan.
Mine too.
My father has a gold coin of Ronald Reagan that still sits on top of his roll top desk, and I would look at that in amazement, and he would tell me Ronald Reagan was the greatest president to ever come down the pike, and America was great, and he made us believe in America again. And all through my youth, I was a punk rocker and a skateboarder, and I would have teachers ask me, "Oh, you love Bill Clinton, don't you?" I'd say, "No, Bill Clinton's a scumbag. We need to bring in somebody like Ronald Reagan." And my teachers would look at me, a lot of teachers are liberal, and they'd look at me like, "You've got to be kidding. You like Ronald Reagan? He was horrible. Oh, this." I'd say, "No way. This Clinton guy's the one that you need to watch out for."
Yeah, and definitely, as I said earlier in the show, I was a Newt Gingrich supporter first and foremost. And I just think, and I agree with, what my friend Mark Presick said, is I believe that, America lost a great opportunity in having him be the president. I just think his ideas for America, his vision, for America par none. I mean, Ron Paul came, a close, second, at least for me. But I just think I think he would have surpassed his, Newt Gingrich presidency would have surpassed the Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was great, but I really think that Newt Gingrich really could have, really could have done even more. So we'll move on. But we haven't heard from Nicole for Benton. Hopefully we'll have Mr. Smack coming on soon, because we are coming up to the top of the hour. So go ahead, Nicole, and we'll move from there.
Well, I totally get what Brian is saying about, substituting terms, because we've been branded in a lot of ways that, it's different for different states, I think, because some states I've heard that where they have more of a liberty-oriented folks majority, that if you shy away from certain terms, then you're kind of branded in the opposite way as a sellout or something. But what I've experienced here is that I have to even somewhat be careful with what issues and what candidates I promote, because I am branded as, you know, a liberty person and, you know, called a libertarian or whatever. And so I don't want to promote a candidate and it actually end up being harmful to them. I have to be careful with that, because, you know, there are certain individuals who would say, just because it's coming from me, that it must be libertarian or liberal or something, which, you know, obviously I'm not, but because of those associations. And, you know, whatever you want to replace it with, Ronald Reagan or constitutionalist or grassroots, I like that term lately, but it's something that we do have to be kind of careful with in playing politics, I guess. But also on the rule changes, one thing that I wanted to say about Mr. Smack and that situation, I think that he came out and said the other day that he would be looking back over what the amendment entails that he was in support of, and that if it doesn't address rules 12 and 40, which it doesn't, that, you know, he would be willing to admit that maybe he was misinformed and willing to learn more and look more into it and take further steps to remedy the situation. And I think that that is really commendable for him to say that, because there's a lot of confusion around what the amendment is, and it doesn't help that we have committee members, even North Carolina committee members, are saying, you know, I'll send them emails about the situation, and they reply and say, yes, I'm going to work to remedy these rule concerns, I'm going to support the amendment or whatever, and it's like they're not even reading what we're saying, you know, they because we're telling them, well, this amendment doesn't address our specific concerns. And it takes a lot for somebody to, you know, admit that maybe they were misinformed, they come out and say that they're going to remedy the situation, and that gives me a lot of hope. I think that he could potentially be a big ally in this fight, and if he's willing to come on board with, you know, a motion before the entire body of the RNC or whatever it is that needs to be done to remedy it, then I think we just need to be reaching out to committee members of every single state and just, you know, taking a survey. Would you be willing to do this as a start kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, go ahead. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I agree with her. You know, I think it is commendable. But, you know, there's congressmen and senators that don't read the bills that they pass. And, you know, it's unfortunately that it's that systemic that it reaches into our, you know, national committee members, that when things aren't on their own radar, that it's not coming from the ground up. There's a communications problem in our parties, because you look at North Carolina, I mean, you guys passed a resolution rebuking the rule, and so you would think that there would be some type of education effort on behalf of these committee members that now have to, you know, finish this resolve, yet they're not even understanding some of the most basic concepts of how this is applied and what is wrong and what is right. I mean, after speaking to at least 140 of them in North Carolina, I mean, for the most part, they were not going to accept allowing a repeat or to wash away what has happened just off the basis of their own either personal sacrifice or a friend's sacrifice or whatever it is. You know, they're just, you know, they really don't want to invest the time to even learn about it. And unfortunately, it really is going to cost not just, you know, Republicans in, you know, 2016, but I mean, just for any candidate. I mean, that even if they address Rule 16, Rule 40, I mean, that just, it kills any type of grassroots effort. And, you know, I think it's just disingenuous to keep those rules on there at face value anyway. I think it would do...
Hey Brian, can I just interject real quick? And sure. maybe you can explain to people, because I know a lot of times we get lost in these numbers and rules, just to explain why Rule 40 is so bad. You're better at doing it than I am.
Yeah, well, Rule 40 takes it from a five-state plurality of delegates to nominate somebody from the, you know, to an eight-state majority. So, I mean, you effectively, you know how hard it was just to get, you know, five states to nominate Ron Paul. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Especially after all the vetoing and some of the shenanigans that went on there, you know, within state parties and everything they did with the delegates. I mean, even when in Tampa, you know, they weren't stopping at just, you know, getting rid of delegates that they were afraid of, but they were even, you know, passing along paperwork so that, you know, these delegates that are basically there to be props sign away their privileges of voting privileges so they don't even have to take a floor vote. Fortunately, they didn't get enough to just do that per se, but I mean, you know, anything's possible here in the future. And when you can control the delegates going to the convention every 4 years, we have a huge problem. I mean, no, we have to look ahead, not just at what they did just last year, but let's look at what it opens up them to do in 2016 at this next convention. You know, saying they don't do anything about 16 and say they get to, you know, they put the, you know, their next in line and put them out in these races, and, you know, these same things happen from state to state, and then turn around and have, you know, their golden boy basically sweep up these delegates and have veto power over these delegations. What
mm-hmm.
is that? Their full control is now gone over our party. I mean, that is like the last vestige. Like, if we cannot repeal these, I mean, this is, we're borderline, you know, going down in the Titanic. Serious. And for those that really sit around and, you know, that are even contemplating the idea of who may run and who they may support in 2016, you're riding around on unicorns. I mean, really, you really have to take a look at this. If you're that endazzled by somebody 3 years from now, you have really got to take a real deep look, pat yourself on the back for getting involved, but then say, wait a minute, what's going on right now that's going to affect that time down there? Because waking up like a zombie every 3 years or 4 years is not going to cut it. You know what I mean? You have to get involved
mm-hmm.
today, tomorrow, the next day. And, you know, that's what it's about.
Absolutely. And I would just add on to what Brian was saying there is, the same thing that I was saying, you know, when Brian was making the point, you know, look at it was Ronald Reagan could not get nominated. Well, you know, look at who had been nominated in the past and the way the conventions used to work. That's how we built this party, from a party that, you know, obviously we had Eisenhower, but after that, it would have been Democrat rule if it had not been for the fireworks that the Republican Party allows to happen. The Democrat Party is a party that is boring and is, you know, there's no point of even being involved in it unless you just want to be a yes man. The Republican Party is the party of fireworks. It's the party of activism. It's the party of bottom up. So
mm-hmm.
whether or not it's, you know, the five-state, eight-state thing, the five-state is very important, because five states means that if you can get 10% of the states then you can get up there and you can say, okay, candidate that is nominated, okay, Mitt Romney, if you want our support, us Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich or whoever it is that is going to go to the convention, and Newt was talking about taking it all the way to the convention at one time. If you want our support, this is what we think. This is what we think you should do. And if Romney would have, Romney would have brought in Newt, and Romney would have brought in Ron Paul, and brought in, Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum, and brought in the people that he was, competing against, and running all these horrible ads against, I think that would have went a long way. But forget about the presidency for a second. Like I say, forget about that aspect of it, because it's a big aspect. Forget about it completely, but forget about it just for a second and ask yourself, where are we going to be if the people that make all of the decisions, they talk about, what's next, are they going to come back and make sure that all the delegates are picked by whoever is the chosen one? How much farther are they going to go? They're going in the wrong direction. We obviously noticed that. But the grassroots, to have their voice completely shut out, that's where we're heading. So if you want to be able to push these issues, when Karl Rove says, hey, you know what? I'm at war with the grassroots and the Tea Party, and the next guy to get the nomination, let's say they run Romney again, just for the sake of the argument, Romney again, and he's the nominee. We don't want to talk about abortion anymore. We don't want to talk about any social issues for the conservatives. That's one leg of Ronald Reagan's three-legged stool. We don't want to talk about the financial issues and the libertarian principles of small government Barry Goldwater type stuff. Shut that leg out of the party. The only leg of the party that they're going to leave sitting on the ground is the national security. The national security stance is overrepresented at this time, and it's overrepresented by two parties, not just one party. And if anybody got the chance to check out Rand Paul's speech today, I think Rand Paul will be more appealing to people that weren't Ron Paul supporters than Ron Paul could ever be, because Rand Paul is very much in favor of us being, able to be anywhere in the world at any time, and to even have ourselves across the globe in positions to react to things. And I catch a lot of flack from people that are Liberty or Ron Paul supporters, and I say, hey, look, would you
hold on? I apologize, but it looks like we do have Mr. Smack on the line, so I'm going to open up his mic and have him come on in, and we can continue this. If someone's got some background noise going on, please mute your mic so that we don't have that interrupting anyone's conversation. So without any further ado, I will open up the mic of 775. Is this Mr. Smack?
That would be me.
Thank you very much for calling in the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thank you very much for asking. Let's get right into it. The first thing we'll discuss is, we discussed this on other nights, is with the memorandum and the support for Rince Priebus for the RNC chair. So if we could go into that first, and then we'll move over to the RNC rules 12 and 40 and the question on whether those rules will stay. I think that's the way we want to pursue it. So let's start off. Go ahead.
Alrighty. Well, I'll start off first of all by saying that I'm going to do everything in my power to blow up rules 12 and 40. I mean, that's straight up. That's what part of my plan was and has been ever since I found out those rules were in place, because I don't think they're fair rules. I think they hurt the grassroots. I think they hurt lesser funded candidates, and it kind of almost makes it like a coronation when you get to the convention. And I think the convention is going to be places where we need to have a little bit of debate, a little bit of discourse, a little bit of let's fight it out a little bit and make sure that we have the exact right plan that we have for our party going forward. So I'm not against the contentious convention. I think it's a good thing for the party.
Well, I agree. When I've said that many times in the show, especially during the end of the primaries and before the convention, and even during the coverage when we covered the convention, was it was more like a coronation than a nomination, and that's definitely what it seemed more so than anything else.
Right. No. It's all scripted and choreographed, and I mean it's well documented that. That John Boehner was reading pretty much off a teleprompter when those rules were passed. I mean, I was in the auditorium at the time. I think the eyes and the nays were pretty close. From where I was sitting, I mean, it could have gone either way. But to be honest with you, to just say the eyes have it, that was BS. That's not something that should have been allowed to proceed. I think it should have been something that there should have been there had to be some way to count the delegation and figure out who was really in favor, who was really opposed. And I mean, and something that it was a national committee man from Utah, who's not necessarily who I'd be considering a liberty person, but somebody who's been around the process for a while, said he was hearing a lot of nays and that from the gallery area where the alternates were. Well, if that was the case, a hand count would have been able to resolve that pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they should have proceeded with that. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. There had to be some way to count the delegates, and there was no way that I could see. That there was any kind of a plan for actually doing any kind of a vote count.
Mm-hmm.
It was all scripted, it was all choreographed, and it was basically intended to keep going forward and stay on target for time. So it was made for television, basically.
Yeah. Well, one thing we've kind of dubbed it when we, as I said during our coverage of the convention, was it was more like a circus. More like a pageant almost. Almost like a pageant than a convention.
I would go pageant more than circus because a circus, you've got three rings of activity going on, and there wasn't three rings of activity. All the activity was basically focused on one point.
Mm-hmm.
So a pageant would be probably a better description, which is too bad. I mean, if you look at our history of our country and some of the raucous conventions that they used to have back in the 1800s and early 1900s,
mm-hmm.
And some of the things and some of the people that end up becoming president of the United States because of a convention, it's really kind of sad at this point that to be honest with you, I mean, what harm would there have been for Ron Paul to get a nomination, for him to make a speech, and for him to get 300 or 400 delegate votes? There would have been no harm in it at all. Romney was still going to win the day. He had the delegates on the floor. I don't think there was any way that anybody could really tell me otherwise. And then you've got. Then the Liberty folks have had their day. They've had their man speak at the convention. They've had their opportunity to vote. I say take all the binding rules off everybody. Let everybody vote the way they want to vote. It still probably would have gone to Romney. I don't see any reason why not. If it didn't go to Romney on the first ballot, then he should have withdrawn after that. Because there's no good reason why if Mitt Romney, with all the money and all the organization he supposedly had going into that building, didn't have the votes to win it on the first ballot, he shouldn't have even been around for a second one.
No, I definitely agree with that, and I've said this before, and this is before you came on, is I was a still am in some manner a Newt Gingrich supporter, so I was really hoping that there would have been a brokered convention so that he would have a shot at nomination. Excuse me.
I think there's a lot of Rick Santorum people that felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, definitely. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm good.
No, some people won't talk much about this at all, if any, actually. Some actually would say that Santorum actually split the conservative vote, was a big part of splitting the conservative vote that pretty much opened a pathway for Romney to get the nomination. So, a little play on words.
Well, Romney was also smart enough 4 years earlier to make sure that he had the appropriate people in place on the RNC. He made sure that he had a lot of his supporters elected as RNC members. And that's one place where, unfortunately, I think the Liberty folks missed an opportunity. We had an opportunity in one of these conventions to get national committee men and national committee elected. And that kind of brings me to the whole ranked previous support at this point.
Actually, I think that's a good segue. Go ahead.
We had an excellent opportunity to get 20, 30, 40 Liberty folks elected at a number of different conventions across the country. And from what I could see, we ended up basically getting four. We got the two from Maine, and we got the two from Nevada. We've got a state chairman in Iowa that's friendly, a couple other people that are pretty friendly to our cause, but I would say they're probably more Tea Party types more so than true liberty movement types.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who like what we have to say in the RNC. So, but the fact of the matter is, my support coming down for Priebus came down to the simple fact that Mark wasn't finding a third state for nomination, neither was I. I worked the whole day on Wednesday trying to find that third state for him. I talked to delegates. I talked to the RNC members from Wyoming. I talked to the RNC members from Missouri. There wasn't going to be any movement there. So I can continue to act like in a room of 168 people, be one of three or four people that isolates themselves, or I can try to work from within. And I think it's more important to work from within. And when people say you're sacrificing your principles. No, I don't think I'm sacrificing my principles. I think what I'm doing is I'm trying to find a way to get people to listen to my principles and get them interested in what I have to say and take me seriously. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And I think I think because that's how we did it here in Nevada. I was looked at in 2008 as this crazy person with three heads that loves Ron Paul. And by 2009, I was getting some respect on the floor of the Central Committee. By 2011, I was elected vice chairman of the party, and in 2012, I was elected national committee man.
Mm-hmm.
Because eventually people stopped shutting me out and listening to what I had to say, and they said, you know, this guy makes some sense. They weren't just thinking I was some loudmouth. I was a loudmouth that actually had something to say and something to say that made some sense to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question here? This is Chuck Souter, constitutionalwar.org, and I had the interview with Chairman Priebus, and it does seem like he was wanting to say that he wants to come our way, and I like what you're saying right now. I applaud your efforts, and I completely understand your position. You have to represent your state. I want to preface it by saying I don't want to be the guy who asks the tough question in the room. What was there arm twisting, and is there anything that you can talk about, or is it something that, you know, you're not ready to talk about? You will talk about after April. You know, I want to say it ask the question in the nicest way possible. Was there arm twisting, and you know it's. In my opinion, some arm twisting is fair. Politics is all about arm twisting.
I agree with that, and I'm not going to say that there wasn't a pitch made to work with Chairman Priebus and to nominate him on Monday after that at the end of that dinner, because there was. I mean, I think I put that out in the memorandum, but he asked me for that support.
Mm-hmm.
My state chairman, who I supported for election, who also supported Ron Paul. Who also has been basically he and I have been working as a team, me being still his vice chairman and as the chairman of the party, had asked me to do this also. So I have that working.
Hello?
Is that mine?
Yeah, continue your point. Something went wrong there for a second, but continue.
It could be my Bluetooth, and if it is, I'll switch. If it does it again, I'll switch off to the phone.
Okay.
If it's a matter of was there arm twisting? Well, yeah, but any time there's politics, there's arm twisting. But I wasn't getting just arm twisting from Ryan Priebus. I was getting that arm twisting from my state chairman too, that he really wanted me to join him in being the third state nominating Chairman Priebus for re-election in order to try and put some of the bad blood behind both of us, the bad blood that Priebus held toward Nevada and the bad blood that we held toward him, and really try to work together going forward. So if there was, was there any kind of a smoking gun secret deal or anything like that that came out of it? No, there was nothing like that. There was nothing like that at all. The offer to help Nevada was being made by Chairman Priebus with or without my support. But I think that by supporting him, though, he's going to make that offer to help a higher priority on his list.
Well, and I want to chime in about this, is do you feel that, or think that, rather, that by choosing Nevada to be that third state for the nomination was, at least this is how I may see it, is not so much as, you know, trying to, I guess, heal a rift that might be between the Nevada RNC, or not, you know, the Ohio, Nevada Republican Party and Rick Priebus, but more so, instead of, you know, healing those wounds, more so a, hey, let's make a point to show what kind of, you know, just to make a point. You know, I think it's, some may see that they're just trying to say, okay, we're going to pick Nevada, you know, because Nevada was one of the folks that they were looking for, you know, getting the nomination for Mark Willis. And then by using, you know, by switching that around and changing Nevada from Mark Willis to Rich Priebus, it's more about making a statement than actually healing any kind of rift.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that logic per se, because number one, if Mark would have had that third state stone cold locked, I wouldn't have done what I did. Because I wasn't going to turn my back on a man that I told a month and a half ago that I was going to, that I was going to support.
But was that Priebus?
It wouldn't have been.
I was wondering if that's I'm wondering if that was Priebus' thoughts, not necessarily your thoughts, but something that Priebus was, that came from him, is what
I'm
thinking.
You know, I can't speak to what he was thinking. The three states that he chose to nominate him were Wisconsin, which was his home state, Mississippi, and Nevada. Mississippi, I think because of his friendship with the Barber, Henry Barber, Haley Barber, and that, he's got a long-standing relationship there. And Nevada was more, he wanted a state that was perceived as being wronged, and he wanted to move forward in making things right again, and making the party strong out here again. And yeah, I've had conversations with him subsequently, and to be honest with you, we are putting together a plan to make sure that the Nevada Republican Party doesn't have to worry about going through what it went through in 2012, which is basically being shut out by the RNC. And he's been working with myself, he's been working with Chairman McDonald, and he's been keeping true to his word of what he was going to do as far as helping Nevada. But again, there's no real smoking gun here. He's helping other state parties as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter that he's just chosen Nevada and said, well, I did as much as I possibly could to destroy them. Now I'm going to prove that I can build them back up again. I don't think so. I think he recognizes that we have good leadership out here, and that we're not a bunch of ideologues, that we're really interested in making sure that we get that at the end of the day, Republicans are still better than Democrats, and we need to get as many of them elected as possible, because the road that we're on right now with Obama is certainly not the road we need to be on, and it's a scary road.
Sure, but let's talk about principles. But is it more about party than principles, or what takes precedence, the party or the principles for the party that many people expect them to espouse?
If I'm making a decision strictly for James Smack, then it's going to be a decision about principles. But if I'm making a decision as a representative of every Nevada Republican, I need to put that into perspective as well. It's not necessarily the decision that I would have made if I'd have been the only person that was involved in it, but I'm not the only person involved in it. I represent over 200,000 registered Republicans. 200,000 is a higher number than that, but certainly a high number of registered Republicans in the state of Nevada, and
mm-hmm.
the majority of them have applauded what I did. So the ones that have been the vocal minority have been really, honestly speaking, I probably shot my base of support pretty badly, but they're pretty stunned by what I did. And
mm-hmm.
But the thing is that I told them going in, I'm not going to be afraid to make a tough choice, but I will promise you I'll make a choice. You're never going to see me abstaining from things. You're never going to see me from shying away from things. You're never going to see me staying away from making a logical explanation about what I did. And you know what? If I have to come after you guys, I'm going to. If I have to do it publicly, it doesn't mean that I don't necessarily like what you're doing, and privately I'm kind of cheering you on, but I'm in a position now where I have to represent the party too. And so sometimes you have to realize that sometimes I'm speaking as a mouthpiece for the party and not necessarily speaking from my heart.
Absolutely. Hey, James, the question, this is Chuck again.
Okay.
I would just ask is, you know, obviously I think that, you know, politics is politics. So what were you able to accomplish with Chairman Priebus? Were you able to get him to understand that our frustration with the, you know, with the entire group of rules and not just the Morton Blackwell Avenue of Rule 16 and,
yeah,
you know, Rule 40 and, you know, Rule 12 as well. Were you able to communicate any of that to him? And
I communicated a lot of that frustration to him, actually, and I told him, I said, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm coming to blow up Rule 12, 16, and 40. I want them all gone. I want,
mm-hmm,
them all, I want them all either reverted back to where they were in 2008 or gone altogether. That's where I'm coming from. But, again, that's where I'm going to be coming from. I've been newly appointed as the Rules Committee representative from the state of Nevada. That only means I'm one out of 56. That
right.
still means I have to convince 28 others to join me in order to get a Rules Committee resolution passed. And then we've got to get over the massive hurdle of the 75% of the entire RMC membership going along with it. It is not going to be an easy road, but it is a hill that I am willing to die on. Meaning,
well,
if it doesn't happen, it isn't going to be because of my best efforts, because I didn't give my best effort. It is going to be because I went down in flames fighting for exactly what I wanted and fighting for exactly what I believe is right.
Amen. Amen, man. Amen.
This is unfortunately, I didn't find the Mark Willis nomination to be that hill to die on. The rules are the hill to die on. Because whether Mark got nominated or not, he wasn't going to win. And I think he even knew that. And I like Mark. I like to think that he's still my friend. And I hope he's not. I hope he's not holding a long-term grudge on me, because I still want to be able to work with him. He and I share pretty much all the same ideas. He's going to be somebody that's going to need to be a kindred spirit with me on that RMC, because we are going to be a couple of voices in the wilderness for a while.
Well, and what motivation would that be for Priebus or the other, you know, chairs to have these rules and then for 2012 and then go back and revert to the rules of 2008? I mean, why would they create these? I mean, was it specifically just for to try to get a Romney nomination, which, of course, we see how that went.
I think it was a Romney protection, too. I think he was trying to
mm-hmm.
protect himself against any kind of a grassroots uprising in 2016. And by putting these archaic rules into place, they were really incumbent protection rules. Romney and his folks thought they were going to win, and they had every reason to believe they were going to win. And by putting these rules in place, it was going to make it that much harder for a Tea Party grassroots upstart in 2016 to make any headway. It was going to protect Mitt Romney for a second term. That's out of the equation now. There is no Mitt Romney second term coming. There's no Mitt Romney first term. So when we look at it and say, you know, 8 states to nominate, I mean, what if we have 3 good candidates going into the convention and one of them can only get 7 states? Do we leave them off the ballot? That's ridiculous. I'll be honest with you. I think 3 states to nominate is enough. I don't think you need 5.
I'm curious here.
If you can get a plurality of delegates from 3 states, you shouldn't be on the ballot. I'll give you that. But 5 states, 8 states, the bar is too high.
And Brian, it sounds like you want to chime in.
Yeah, I just had a question from Mr. Frank. Hey, first, hello, how are you doing? And I
I'm
can
good.
Probably
how
speak on behalf
real,
of Mark.
Real quick, Brian, you go ahead, and then I know Nicole wants to chime in as well, so we'll go with you, Brian, and then Nicole. Sorry for the interruption. I just want to put that in there. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, I was just saying I can almost speak on behalf of Mark on saying I know that, you know, on the way back, he holds no grudges towards anybody, and, you know, he felt that, you know, this was something that he was moved to do, and he took the stand, and I congratulate him on that. And, you know, I think it says a lot about his character and his stature, and I'm sure that that's going to, you know, follow through to the next, you know, through the rest of his term here over the next 3 years.
It took a lot of guts to step out the way Mark did. I'm never going to take that away from him at all.
Absolutely. I hope that that's just the start, because unfortunately what we've gotten to is sort of like this direct democracy, even within our own party. And it's unfortunate that, you know, to think that just because you don't go along with the grain, that you would either be, you know, a carrot would be stuck in front of you or a paddle smacked on your hand. And, you know, to where there's really no communication line, you know, within this party at all. I don't hold any grudges against you, and I can understand, you know, I can't hold you to the same decisions and convictions that I might have or somebody else might have. And I respect that, you know, whatever you have to do, you have to answer to everybody within your own state, and I live in Maine. So, but what I was curious was, is I sat at the resolution committee in North Carolina, and Mark presented the resolution that I passed here in Maine. And obviously you were there, you saw what happened there, a lot of collar pulling and a lot of sweating heads and a lot of shaking heads that basically, you know, they didn't even want to make the motion to discuss it. So, and then when Diane Orrick, committee woman, presented the Nevada resolution, which is, you know, another decent piece of work, I know there was a lot of hard people or a lot of good people out there working on that. And, you know, there was rumors before this whole resolution committee that, you know, that there was going to be a motion made by Maureen Blackwell. And I'm just wondering, is that before you presented that resolution, did they come to you and say, listen, we have a motion to substitute that? Or was that something that had just happened organically?
I knew that the committee wasn't going to hear our motion as stated. The motion to substitute to the motion that I believe it was Glenn McCall from South Carolina that made the motion to substitute. What that does is that it expedites the Rules Committee formation, meaning the Rules Committee now is going to have to be formed and be prepared to meet at the April meeting as opposed to waiting until the fall. So
but
in other words,
some
we're
would
gonna
say
be
that
able,
that's a negative thing, too.
What's that?
Some would say, like, from me as an activist, you know, I would say that, you know, as fast as we would like to get these rules out of here, I think it's also important that we have the time to, you know, have these states pass their own resolutions so that way, you know, these committee men and women have an opportunity to be educated about it from their own state's point of view. And you know, I do think that it's a double-edged sword by having this special, you know, rules committee look at this in April. I don't know if we're at the point to where people understand what the problem is. I mean, when you say that you agreed to the substitution of this resolution, you basically, you're acknowledging
I directed them how they could do it. I didn't necessarily agree to it, but I'm also a fan of something's better than nothing. If our resolution didn't even get heard, then we wouldn't even have where we're at now, which is the Rules Committee is going to be constituted. We will be meeting at wherever our spring meeting is going to be. And the hopeful thought is that we'll get 29 of the 56 of us to agree on blowing up Rule 12, 16, and 40, taking it to the floor of the whole RNC, and getting them all kicked out once and for all. If that doesn't happen in April, though, it isn't going to be because I didn't give it my best fight. But it may be something that still doesn't happen until the fall meeting anyway. It may be something where I'm still going to need time to educate more people. I'm still going to need time to continue to get people to understand the end goal. I don't think there's a lot of tenor for Maureen Blackwell's amendment, because Maureen Blackwell's amendment basically blows everything up and brings it back, except it doesn't blow up Rule 12. And so therefore, I don't think at the end of the day I'm going to end up supporting that, unless, because I thought the spirit of Maureen Blackwell's amendment was to get rid of everything that went in 2012 and bring everything back to 2008.
No, that actually, Maureen Blackwell, his amendment was the one that Claiborne substituted for your guys' resolution.
No,
so,
it wasn't.
You know, I spoke to Maureen Blackwell.
Blackwell's amendment was not what was substituted for our resolution.
The basis of his, he had no idea as far as what Rule 40 was when I spoke to him. He admitted that, or his approach was to deal with Rule 1 through 11 and 13 through 25 through using Rule 12. which is somewhat what the resolution that they submitted by Claiborne was. I mean, it was basically the same thing. And what I'm saying is it sort of limits the way that the Rules Committee is going to look at this, is saying, okay, we have this big gatekeeper with Rule 12, and now we can manipulate 16. But that really doesn't, there's no, you say blow up, and you said this over and over, but you haven't said what steps there are that you're actually taking. How many RNC members are you reaching out to, and what efforts are you really proposing to educate these other RNC members?
First of all, I'll go to the educating. I'm not even going to know who the RNC members that are on the Rules Committee until March 1. Just because my nomination's done doesn't mean that the other 55 states and territories have nominated their people. So until I know who's on the Rules Committee, I can't educate. I can't really reach out and educate anybody directly.
Well, there's 168 other, 167 other members that at some point will vote.
And I certainly talked to a number of them about the rules while I was there. There's a lot of them that agree with me that 12, 16, and 40 need to be fixed, destroyed, whatever. There's others of them that are a little bit more tepid about that. So it's going to be a struggle. I'm not going to shy away from it, but I am going to tell you it's going to be a struggle. But the fact of the matter is the most important people that I need to influence are going to be the other 55 members of the Rules Committee at this point in time in making the proper recommendations. Because I'll tell you what, an RNC meeting runs just like the convention.
Yeah.
So it's scripted, it's choreographed. So pretty much if the recommendation that comes from the Rules Committee is that 12, 16, and 40 get completely rewritten, and that comes before the RNC full meeting, I'm ready to use that scripting to our advantage to get it passed.
And Nicole, at this time, Nicole, I know you've got some things you'd like to ask or come in about, so I'd like to give the floor to you at this point. So go ahead.
Well, the first thing is in what you're talking about bringing this before the Rules Committee and then taking it before the body of the RNC, the problem that I see in that is I have Rule 12 right here in front of me, and the Morton-Blackwell Amendment says that he is, and the Morton-Blackwell Amendment, first of all, he is doing everything with that amendment that he can possibly do, the full extent that he can do under the 2012 rules through the Rules Committee, because Rule 12 states that they may amend rules numbers 1 through 11 and 13 through 25. And so they cannot evoke Rule 12 to amend Rule 12 or Rule 40 or, you know, Rules 26 through 40. They can only evoke Rule 12 to address those specifically numbered rules. And so I don't understand how what you're talking about bringing before the Rules Committee, how that could address Rules 12 and 40. And also expanding on that, to bring some kind of motion or amendment before the entire body of the RNC, does it have to go through a committee and a committee resolve to then bring it before the entire body, or can it be used like in the manner of a minority report instead to revert all of the rules back to their 2008 form, for example, if enough states committee members supported such a minority report? Is that an option instead of going through the Rules Committee? Because I don't see how the Rules Committee is going to be able to address those things.
Well, first of all, Nicole, I think you and I have exchanged emails or talked a little bit on Facebook back and forth on this a little bit. And first of all, the Rules Committee is going to be a lot dependent on who's made the chairman of the Rules Committee, because the chairman's going to need to be friendly to what we need to be, to what we're trying to do. So the first thing I want to do is find out who the Rules Committee chairman is going to be, and I want to reach out to that individual and let him know my concerns, let him or her know what we're looking to accomplish from the grassroots with the rules. Second of all, we're allowed to make any motion that we want in regards to the rules up until 10 days before the Rules Committee meets. So Morton Blackwell's amendment is not going to be the only one there. I'm planning on making a motion rewriting 12, 16, and 40 in the manner that I feel it should be rewritten, which is basically what I call blowing them up. and I'm planning on bringing that, amendment, and then the Rules Committee chairman could rule it out of order, or he can rule it in order. If he rules it in order and the Rules Committee votes in favor of it, it goes to the floor. If he rules it out of order, I could still appeal the ruling of the chair and perhaps get an override. So the thing is, the nice thing about in committee, we don't have that 75% hurdle. We have a 50% plus one that we have to reach. So the fact of the matter is that getting the committee report to say what we want it to say will go a long way to getting it passed through the full RMC.
Right, but they don't have the power allotted to them to amend Rules 12 and 40. They don't have the power allotted to them.
That's going to require a ruling by the chairman, and a ruling by the chairman can be appealed. And then we'll see what, I mean, if legal counsel then starts swooping in and saying, well, you can't do that, blah, 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 well, then I've got a whole different battle I got to start fighting. But,
and isn't the chairman of the Rules Committee going to, isn't that election going to be held at the April meeting?
I'm not sure whether the Rules Committee chairman is elected by the Rules Committee as a whole or whether that's appointed by the RNC chairman. I actually have a couple of those questions into the RNC council to find out, and I haven't received word back yet. So, but
is it an option to take it directly before the body of the RNC if we decided that was a better route that we wanted to try to take to get support for a minority report?
I would say that probably that is probably certainly an option. The issue that I see with that option, though, is that if we don't get the RNC chairman on board with whatever we're trying to do, it's going to fail. He's got too much power. So the main thing is that I would prefer it comes out of committee, because what I do have is his word that if it comes out of committee, he's going to support it.
Well, okay, so Ryan Slavis has told you that if the committee resolves to do that, that he'll support it?
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to ask
you... He said he'll be supportive of the Rules Committee decision. That was how he phrased it to me.
Yeah, I just think, I mean, we're in kind of a tough situation because the Rules Committee under the 2012 rules, which is what they will consider themselves to be bound by, they don't have the authority. They only have the authority to amend Rule 16 by invoking Rule 12. And Rule 12 specifically states that they may only amend specific numbered rules. So
they did a nice job of winding this all together to make my job tough. But you know, I'm not afraid of taking it on, and I want to find a way to pull all three of them up.
It may involve
a minority report. It may involve me making a passionate plea on the floor of the RNC to take my amendment that may not get heard in the Rules Committee and take it up with the entire RNC. The problem is that if the Rules Committee is bound by that, is the full RNC bound by that, is legal counsel going to come in and say, we can't even hear this? That's the wild card that I'm afraid of. I really want counsel to take a look at my motion and give me some kind of a ruling in advance of that 10-day window to let me know, okay, that option didn't work, let's try this, and try to get everything in before that 10-day window, before the Rules Committee meets, and try to get it resolved in the committee. And you know, Nicole, you're one of the people I'm planning on reaching out to when I start putting this stuff together.
Well, thank you, but I'm really concerned with, you know, I think I agree with you that we need to exhaust every effort, that we need to try every means possible, but with them being bound by this Rule 12 to not be able to address through committee Rules 12 and 40, I'm concerned that I don't think that's a very feasible option to go through the Rules Committee, and I'm concerned that it will end up hurting us, actually, to try to go that route, because if they shut it down, then, you know, it's we're less likely to get support for it before the body of the RNC.
Yeah, but the people that are going to get on the Rules Committee are going to be the people that are going to be most acute to probably wanting to make changes in the rules. I think that the people that really don't care whether the rules stay or go are not going to be the people that are going to try and get on the Rules Committee. So I think
the Rules Committee is not going to want to revoke their own power.
That's a very good point.
Maybe. But if it's the right thing to do, then it's just going to be the job of someone like me to convince them.
Well, and I'm going to chime in real quick and then to go ahead and continue, Nicole, is just through all the people who you call into the show and participate in the chat, you know, in the audience here on Bard's Logic, is that, you know, they're watching these things closely. And, you know, these grassroots and these conservatives, you know, they feel like they're on an edge. And, you know, and if this well very well goes against them as they feel with these rules not being overturned or you're getting rid of, they very well may feel that they've been knocked off that edge and, you know, leave the Republican Party. Some already have.
I understand that.
You know, so, I mean, this is something that the RNC, the Republican Party, is really going to have to pay attention to, in my opinion, because if they do not change these rules and the grassroots feels even more disenfranchised than they already do, I think that the Republican Party is going to be in for a rude awakening, because they tried to scare, you know, I really believe that they try to use scare tactics to try to get Romney elected and people be so afraid of Obama, but that didn't work. People were not going to come out because they're like, look, these guys aren't adhering to principles, so we're just not going to come out, and well, now we have Obama again.
Mm-hmm. Hey, can I jump in here? This is Chuck Suter again. What I would like to ask is, you know, what can we do? You know, with what you're saying, what can we do to help support you, James, and your effort to make what you're trying to happen.
I guess
obviously it's a tough row to hoe, but how do we stop this? And if we don't stop this, do you think that the party is going to survive?
Well, first of all, if they put the 2012 rules into place and they have those rules in effect for the 2012 convention, if I'm not mistaken. So there's still an opportunity to correct all of this before the 2016 convention, and that's if the Rules Committee and the 2016 rules are adopted. I mean, whether they are, if he's able to change it or whether it can be changed at the convention in 2016, there's still another opportunity there. I would rather see them change in advance of that so we're not keeping a bunch of Liberty folks just sit back and saying, well, maybe they'll get changed in 2016, maybe they won't.
Real quick, Chuck, let's go down. Brian, chime in because we haven't heard from him for a little bit, and then go ahead, Chuck, and then I really would like to allow you know, Nicole to finish off if there's any thing that you also wanted to. And also, folks, we see that there is about 14 minutes left of the live portion, but of course there is the extended period of time, which is not live, but it is still recorded and put in the archives. And if folks like to listen to the extended version, feel free to call in at 347-945-7428. And if you just want to listen, fine. But if you also like to chime in, go ahead and push the 1 on your number dial. And perhaps one thing I'd like to open up to the audience, if they'd like, is to ask some questions themselves, if they would like to do so. So we'll move on. And go ahead, Brian. Sorry for the interruption. I just want to put that out there, and let's move on.
Sure, not a problem. I just really want to make sure that everybody understands that, you know, come November 2014, Rule 12 states, you know, basically has a clause there that stops you from using Rule 12 and 10. So, you know, we have limited amount of opportunities with the RNC meetings, and especially the first one where there was no standing rules committee. So, you know, we do have a limited time limit to even address this stuff. And after that, you know, if we don't address even 16, I'm saying from a grassroots perspective, from, you know, we're hemorrhaging membership now. If you look at the, you know, the next coronation, there's no chance to basically change those rules, because those people that will be chosen will definitely all be props. They will have perfected exactly what they did, not only to the main delegation, but to a number of delegations at this last convention. So, I mean, I think it's disingenuous to kind of say that we got to, you know, we'll fight it and we'll see what happens. But, I mean, even if Rule 1 stands, Rule 40 or Rule 16, there's not going to be a chance for delegates to want to have the ambition to get involved to go to the next convention to discuss those rules and participate.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. And, Nicole, did you want to finish up any points that you're going to make? And then Mr. James, chime in. Go ahead.
I have a few concerns if we don't address all of the rules at this April meeting because, for instance, like with Rule 12, giving that level of authority to a small committee and, these rules committee meetings, even though they're not necessarily private, it's not like there's a lot of media that reports on them and talks about what's going on, so they pretty much have a pretty good level of privacy. If we don't address Rule 12 now, we don't necessarily know who's going to be on the Rules Committee in the future. And, we have to really put a lot of trust in those people to not screw us over, I guess. I kind of like, a presidential authority or something like that. People make the argument all the time. We don't want the president to have these powers because we don't necessarily trust the other party when they get the presidency. But also, if it's not addressed, at this April meeting, I'm just worried that it'll become the norm, basically, that people will kind of be used to it and forget about it by the time that we're able to address Rule 40 at the 2016 convention. And if Rule 40 isn't addressed now, then looking at the presidential races in 2016, those candidates are not going to have a shot for nomination, the grassroots candidates, even if we get that rule changed at the convention by a vote of the body of the delegation, because the presidential candidates are going to be going by the 2012 rules during their elections. And, once it looks like they maybe only can get 5 states and they know they're going to need 8, surely they would drop out by that point. So, there are a lot of concerns with them not being addressed at the April meeting. I'm just wondering for Mr. Smack, with Rice Priebus having come out and with your relations with him lately, and he told Chuck at the RNC winter meeting in an interview that he really wants to reach out to the grassroots to welcome the grassroots into the party, and that he wants to address our grievances with the rules. And I know you said that he told you that he would go by whatever the Rules Committee says, but I'm just wondering if, you being in the position that you're in now and your recent interaction with him, if you would consider specifically asking him to make a decision to support a motion before the entire body of the RNC rather than just going by whatever the Rules Committee says. And I know that, it's not supposed to be a top-down organization or anything, but it's clear the chairman has a lot of pull, and I think you even said in this conversation you acknowledged that pretty much their decision is followed throughout the RNC. I would like to hear him make an exact statement if he's willing to take those measures. And, coming from you, you would have the you're in the position to be able to say, I stood up for you. Will you stand up for me in return and support something like that?
I don't have any problem with asking him. I don't know whether his answer will change or not, but I certainly have a couple months to work on him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly, I'm not going to, I don't plan on, I'm going to be like a bulldog on a bone with this. I really don't plan on I'm coming away from this empty-handed. I want those three rules fixed. And
yeah.
I already told him I'm coming for those rules. I mean, there's no element of surprise here. He knows exactly what I'm coming for. And so do most of the other members of the RNC I've already talked to. And there are some that are supportive. There are others that are like, well, I'm not sure. And there's others of them that don't seem to understand the rules at all and will just go along with it and be sheep and are just there to party and enjoy cocktail parties. So
I have a quick question, actually.
It's an interesting mix. So, all right, go ahead.
Yeah,
who would you, so you definitely are holding Priebus to his words there, but I mean, who do you think has more sway within the powers that be of the Republican Party when you have somebody like Karl Rove, who's openly, you know, going about and attacking, you know, fiscal conservatives and limited government, and, you know, what would you say about somebody like that when they've opened
the... Well, that's Karl Rove that predicted a Romney victory by 5 points.
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Is that the same Karl Rove that was telling us that it was going to be a Romney landslide? His street cred isn't so high anymore. I don't hear a lot of love for Karl Rove in Republican circles right now. So, you know, he's gonna have to regain some street cred. He's gonna have to win a couple Senate races in 2014 or something like that before he has any credibility at all, in my opinion. But
he's
got a little egg on his face, and maybe he's saying these things because he's coming from a defensive position because he'd been on offense for so long, and then he got a ball intercepted on his ass.
Well, at the same token, where do you stand on, you know, I mean, this is obviously happening to, you know, conservatives and committees and state parties. I mean, there's been all sorts of things going on from Alaska to Wisconsin, you know, and you know, it seems to me that there's a battlefield and that there's blood being drawn on different factions of the party.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to admit that if Priebus has said that he is not going to support these rules changes, or if they're going to support the rules changes, you know, it's obvious that we have to have him on board first rather than anything to the rules.
He's really going to have to be supportive of whatever we come up with. We're really going to need his support. And I do plan on playing that card. I'm like, you know what? I put myself out there for you when it was not politically expedient for me to do so. And it probably hurt myself with my base to the point right now where if the RNC National Committee man election was held again today, I'd probably lose to my opponent at this point.
But not so
much because they don't believe that I'm a better person, but that I turned on them. So that's where...
Go ahead. No, it's good, Charming. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the main thing is that I'm not running for my next reelection. I'm running to try and really make. I'm really just trying to make a difference. I'm not worried about 2016 at this point in time. I'm worried about April.
And speaking of, I'm going to bring it back to the comment you made about Karl Rove, and I agree with it. You know that his credibility has been shot. I think that's one of the reasons why it was so. So shocking, I'd have to say, to, you know, a lot of folks where they just couldn't believe that even after the abysmal failure, let's be honest, the abysmal failure of the Republican Party in this last election, the very much touted the most important election of our lifetime, you know, with probably one of the most, if not the most worst president, at least in our modern history, you know, running for the Republicans to lose the way that they have, that the leader, basically, of the party could go and be reelected unopposed. A lot of people were shocked about that, and they really believe that Riz Priebus's credibility is shot. So what can that guy really do for the Republican Party if he cannot even get, you know, or help get someone elected, you know, the Republicans elected, especially, you know, with Obama getting reelected?
Yeah. And you know something, I mean, the question that I asked right the day after the election day was not so much how did Romney lose, because I don't know.
That was obvious.
I don't know. He said that I didn't see that one coming, but I kind of saw that one coming. But how do you lose a Senate seat in North Dakota? How do you lose a Senate seat in Montana? This is blood red country, and you're losing to a John Tester in Montana. But the only reason why he got there 6 years ago is because they scandalized the Republican candidate he was running against so bad that he was able to squeak out a victory. In North Dakota, really? A Democrat? I mean, I understand the guy that was there before was more conservative than some of the Northeastern Republicans we have, but still, how does that happen? And how do we not pick up Senate seats? That was really more my question. I mean, we managed to hang on to Heller out here in Nevada, barely.
Mm-hmm.
In a race that we should have run away with.
And real quick,
Kelly Berkeley had more ethics violations against her than Carter had liver pills, and we just barely beat her.
Well, and real quick, folks, I do see there's about a minute left of the live time, and of course we will get to an extended recording session that will be heard on the archives. So if anyone would like to call in and listen to the show during that portion, it's 347-945-7428. I do see we do have some folks on the line listening in, and once again, if you'd like to chime in, that's fine. Just push the 1 on your number dial, and we'll open up your mic. Go ahead. Sorry for the interruption. James, go ahead.
Oh, no, I finished my statement.
Yeah, okay. I just want to...
If I could ask one quick question as this live portion wraps up. This is Chuck Suter again. What can we do to support you, and what is the plan of action that you plan to take to rally more people around you, James, to get rid of these rules? I mean, you've kind of explained some of that, but what is the plan of action in like the one sentence? What can we do to help you support a plan of action to get rid of Rule 12, 16, 40?
To start, once the Rules Committee of the RNC is constituted, find out who the Rules Committee member is of your state and reach out to them and let them know that that's what you want done.
Karen,
the more they hear from Republicans in their own state, the more likely they are to take action. They're like any other elected official.
Mm-hmm. My concern with going the route of the Rules Committee is it's in their rules that they're not able to address those things, and I just fear that this is kind of a cop-out measure with Reince Priebus saying, well, I'll do whatever the Rules Committee says. I mean, he knows it's in the rules. They can only address certain rules, and those do not entail the ones that we have some of the biggest grievances against. So, you know, we have to kind of really take some – I feel like we need to take the most extreme measure first and – try to get support around that, because if we do anything short of that, then we're just not going to be in a good position to carry on further.
Okay. I didn't know if you want to follow up on that, James, or...
I really do need to talk to you a little bit more about what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You said the same thing 3 or 4 times, and I hear you. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to do that and get over that 75% hurdle, because we still got to get over that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're going to be able to do that when you got a minority report or something of that nature, where you're already inherently got at least 28 members of the RNC that are against you. Once you've reached 40, you're done. It's hard to do it any other way, but I'm willing to listen to all options. I just want it done.
Well, and speaking of possible options, maybe one of the callers here would have something they chime in about. They give all of us here something to think about. So I see 903 that you'd like to chime in. I'm opening up your mic. Thank you for coming to the show.
Oh, thank you. This is Mary Lewis.
Good to hear you, Mary. Thanks for calling, and it's good to hear from you.
Sure,
go ahead.
Sure. Well, I just wanted to mention that, you know, being a Republican for 30-something years, I mean, I don't have much hope in, and really don't have much trust, James, in the Republican Party at this stage. My concern with trying to go to the April meeting with a normal, let's play by the rules, let's try to get this done kind of attitude, I just don't have much hope in that, only because the corruption that was done in Tampa, I mean, holding people hostage on buses just to get these rules, these rules changed. I mean, I just don't see them following. I see them playing very dirty, and I don't see much hope, because you didn't even choose to get a new chairman, and we've got the same corrupt one that we had from Tampa. And so I don't really know what to say. I mean, I wish I could say, oh, we'd get behind you and support you and try to make this happen. But I wish you could tell me something different so I could feel different about the situation. But I just look at it as just a worthless, battle at this point, because the corruption that is in the RNC right now is just, I mean, I never, ever dreamed that it would be this way.
Hey, can I throw it to Nicole really quick? Because Nicole was actually pretty good friends with Morton Blackwell. She was his guest to the winter meeting. And can you address what Morton said about the about that a lot of folks thought might be somewhat of a hostage situation with Morton, and what his view on that was, Nicole?
Well, when I sat down with him, I asked him specifically about that, and we had issues as well with the North Carolina buses, so I kind of have my own opinion, but Mr. Blackwell, his statement is something to the effect of don't blame malice when, I guess, kind of mistakes will suffice, or some individuals like mess up.
Well, when he said, in all fairness, what he did say, and maybe he is, maybe he's full of it, and, I think there's plenty of people that think he might be, but I believe what he said was he could have gotten to the meeting earlier, he could have taken a cab, he could have done anything that, it was, it was just hectic. What I would say is, forget about the fact that it might have been, people trapped on buses. I would say the fact of the matter is, whether that is what happened or not, the result is the same. And, that might play well with some of our folks that are very upset. But at the same time, we've got to reach out to other committee men and committee women who might take that that statement, that view, as more radical or something along those lines. I'm not saying that what you're saying is wrong, Mary. What I'm saying is Morton himself said that he wrote the minority report. His view is that it was no big deal.
Well, everyone has seen all the videos. I mean, everyone knows the corruption was there. And what I'm saying is plain and simple, we can't play by just fair rules and get anything done. The RNC has corruption in it. And so if you're going to try to get something done with the rules or whatever, I mean, if you think you're just going to walk in there and just everyone try to do everything just on the normal get-go, it's not going to work. I mean, I don't think that's
work. I'm going to agree with that. I know that I'm facing an uphill battle trying to get this fixed in April, but the main thing, again, it was an uphill battle for us to try and get things fixed here in Nevada starting in 2008. In 2008, we had that same level of, maybe corruption's too strong of a word, but you certainly had your establishment people well-entrenched running the party in this state. Take it to 2012, we've turned that around, and virtually the entire executive board are grassroots people. They're Ron Paul people. They were Gingrich people. There are only one or two of them at this point in time were ones that were always dyed-in-the-wool Mitt Romney supporters and dyed-in-the-wool what I would consider to be establishment Republicans.
I didn't know any of those.
out of 12 executive board members, I think we have three that are of that persuasion, and the rest of the other nine of us are all grassroots people that really haven't even been involved in the process that long. My God, in 2007, I was a registered libertarian.
Well,
I had been for 15 years.
I just think everyone has to work really smart and be very, on top of the game thing. I mean, we can't just we need some real leadership at every state level, And
well, I understand that, and that's going to be a state-by-state thing.
Mm-hmm.
It took us 3 solid years of working, and a lot of us having to kind of swallow things a little bit and going along to get along for a little while, and going out and proving that we could do the work, and proving that not only could we do the work, but we understood technology, we understood how to utilize resources, we understood how to raise money, and we figured all this out to the point where we'd worked so hard that it was natural that they would look at us to be their next leadership for the party.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, by God, there was a Ron Paul guy that was the acting chairman of the Nevada Republican Party in February of last year. How many state chairs out there were supporters of Ron Paul? Not very many.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we had one there, one that wasn't even afraid to shy away from it.
And Nicole, I'd like to you mentioned, and you don't have to answer what your opinion is. What your opinion was, and you talked about, I guess, the buzzes being fixed. You said you have your own opinions. I'd be interested in hearing what those are, if you're okay with sharing that with us.
Obviously, that was on Tuesday of the RNC in Tampa, and that was the most crucial day for the rule changes. And, that was the day that most of the business was done for the entire RNC. After that, it was kind of just party pageant stuff. But there were so many bus issues that day, and nobody really saw it coming, obviously. We were in our delegation hotels. I mean, they've run national conventions before. So to have such a level of panic and confusion. But with North Carolina specifically, we had a delegation meeting where the North Carolina delegation met on Monday to discuss the rule changes, and on Monday afternoon we had an official delegation meeting to discuss it, and some level of corruption went down there, which is on the internet if anybody's curious to see, but the North Carolina chairman basically strong-armed the North Carolina delegation to go along with his rule changes. He made everybody specifically state where they stood on the rule changes and then state, you know, what was their position. Was it delegate, alternate, or guest? And he was taking a tally of what groups had the most support for the rule changes, and it was clear that he had received some top-down orders to get us to go along with the rule changes. In the video, you see he's kind of bullying the delegation, and it's really terrible. But the next day when we were at the delegation hotel and we were getting ready to get on the buses to go to RNC, they sent, I believe it was 2 buses, so that fit most of our delegates. We had, I think, around 55 delegates. And so they made sure to put the delegates on the bus first, which makes perfect sense. They wanted to make sure that they would get there and on time to be in their seats for voting. And they said that the other buses were right behind them, that they would be along to get the alternates and guests. Now, when we were in that delegation meeting in which we were discussing the rules, it was clear that there was far more opposition to the rules in the alternates and guests than there were of the delegates themselves. And so we're in the delegation hotel all sitting around, and we were with some of the Minnesota folks as well waiting on the buses. And, you know, 30 minutes goes by, an hour goes by, and I start kind of really panicking because we were 30 minutes from where the convention was, and it was within 30 minutes time to start at 2 o'clock. And so I took out my phone and I started live streaming. Some of this is recorded, a little bit of the narrative on my archives. But when we started asking around and trying to figure out what the situation was with the buses that they said were right behind them, one of the, I guess, administrative officials there was making some phone calls, and she said that the North Carolina State GOP had reported to the RNC that we would only need transportation for 25% of our total registered delegation. And, you know, the delegation entails delegates, alternates, guests, like everybody that was registered to be there. So, you know, there was confirmation right there that it had been ordered that we only needed just the amount of transportation to send the most, the ones who were most going along with the rules. And, you know, I cannot imagine any reason that our chairman or whoever made that call would have stated that we only needed transportation for 25% of the delegation.
Yes, I just need to chime in here for a second. I've got to drop off. I've got a phone call coming in that I got to take care of.
Sure, I appreciate you coming in. Go ahead.
All righty, I appreciate it. Thank you very much for giving me
the time.
Thanks
for coming on the call, and I do want to talk with you more soon. I really appreciate you
coming on. You've got me on Facebook. That's a real easy way to get a hold of me. I think my cell phone number is on there. If you ever want to call, that's fine, too. If not, just message me, and I'll send it to you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, perfect. Thank you.
Can you go ahead? You had a few comments before you had to go, James?
I think he was getting off.
Oh, okay. Perhaps. Oh, I thought he had a few comments before I had to go, but he probably had to take that real quick. Go ahead, Nicole. Finish off any thoughts that you may have had there. Go ahead.
Well, that was basically the situation from my viewpoint with the bus ordeal. And then when we got to the RNC, we ended up having to take a private transportation, which was still buses, but it was a private entity hired by the North Carolina GOP specifically so that we could, the rest of us could get there. And then when we got there and we were late and then we started reading on our cell phones all these reports of the Virginia delegation, I think maybe Rhode Island and Louisiana were a couple others that had these bus issues. And at that point we started really, feeling like there was intent behind that bus ordeal.
I definitely think so, don't you? I mean, you experienced it. I mean, I just think it's too coincidental that all the buses were having trouble and that they picked
and
it.
And some of the most vocal opponents of the rule changes and
yes, just happened not to get there. Yeah, I know. That just and knowing how corrupt the government has gotten. And both parties, I mean, you know, you know that it had to be intentional. I mean, that's my feeling on it. I mean, I just feel like we've all been, you know, looking through rose-colored glasses, I guess, and just not realizing what's been going on. And I just think a lot of it was revealed, and I think that now that it's been revealed, I mean, I know as far as me personally, I just don't feel the same about Karl Rove, just a lot of the people that I see now and listen to. I just don't trust them. I just think that they're in it for themselves and the power that the government, you know, and the money they're making and the power they've got, and that they're just taking it to a level that it can't be ignored anymore. It's more out in the open even. And us, for grassroots, I don't know what we're going to do, but whatever we're going to do, we need to do quickly, and we need to do it smart. And as soon as we have some leaders that, you know, make it claim to be our leaders and that we trust, I'm on board 100%. But I just haven't, you know, I don't know who that is right now, and, you know, but the trust level is my main thing. I just don't trust the normal politicians.
Well, I don't blame you. I don't blame anybody for not trusting the thing. Hmm. But I go back to the same thing that I always go back to. If somebody punches you in the face on the schoolyard when you're a little kid, do you just run away and quit? You know, if somebody tells you you can't make the cheerleading squad or the football team, you just tell them, oh, okay, okay. Because that's whatever, you know, that goes on from the time you're a kid to the time you die. It don't matter. There's going to be people, there's going to be folks out there that want to run the show for their own benefit, and they're going to do their best to do that. What I say is somebody punches me in the face, I'm hitting them right back. Somebody tells me I can't make the football team, even if I don't want to make the football team, I'm going to go out and make the football team just to tick them off. I was about to cuss, but I held back there. I made sure I didn't. But that's my whole point. Look, I want to save this Republican Party for nothing else than to just prove that we can do it. I mean, where's our pride? Let's show them. Show them that they can't stop us.
But we got to have some leadership, and we have to have someone we can trust. Someone that, I mean, you know, it's going to take more than just, I mean, we're going to have some strong leaders. I know, but we got to have strong leaders in every state and every, I mean, it's not.
That's what's so great about this radio show here. That's what's so great about the Internet. The Internet is the Internet has done to media and information what the revolver did to self-defense and minorities and poor people being able to protect themselves, firearms being able to protect people that could not protect themselves any other way. When people were, you know, if you had the metal armor and you had the sword and you had the army, you just go in and mow everybody down. That's what's made America great, the right to bear arms. Well, we have the right to free speech. And we need to use that free speech while we still have it to protect it and do everything that we can. Look, this is a battle that our founding fathers would laugh at us for complaining about. And I complain about it all the time. I'm not saying that, you know, hey, man, this is easy. Look, I am upset as you are. I'm just as upset as you are. I mean, you know, as a Ron Paul supporter.
It's not that I don't want to do anything. Is this Chuck? Is that who's talking?
Yeah, this is Chuck.
Yeah, it's not that I don't want to do anything, Chuck. I do want to do something. I just want to get, I want to get behind someone that will take the lead that I trust, and I don't, and that may be just a politician, you know, on a national level. I don't know. I just want to get behind, you know, someone I can trust, and I will do.
I'll
be right there with them.
My advice is always, you can never win at a national level unless you have the framework and the groundwork on the local state level. It's all about states' rights. Mm-hmm. I want to win the president. I'll tell you right now, straight up, from what I see right now, I want Rand Paul to win. Not because his last name is Paul, because, I mean, I just think he's doing great things, talking about great things. I think he's got a lot more to give than Rubio's got to give. I want Rand Paul to win. Am I banking? Is that my biggest focus? No, I started a Facebook group to support Rand Paul in 2016. I look at it every once in a while. That's not my focus. My focus is what Tom Davis is doing down here in South Carolina. My focus is on what we've got going on up here in North Carolina, trying to make our liberal Republican governor nullify Obamacare. I'm looking at what Virginia and Montana just did, nullifying drone access to their states to keep the drones out. You look at Alabama's nullified Obamacare. Why can't every other state do that? It's all about the state level. You got to find out. You got to know who your state, your district representative is,
right.
Your state senator is.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know who they are. You need to know who your sheriff is. That's where you win the battle. Mm-hmm. If you can find out that information, look, everybody knows who's on the national stage. All you got to do is flip on the TV. The TV will tell you those things. Mm-hmm. It ain't hard. C-SPAN's got all 535 of them on there every single day. So forget about that. If you want to have an effect, if you want to make a difference, understand your local politics, because you will be one of few, and it will take minimal effort, minimal time, minimal travel, and if you reach out to them, more than likely they're going to be shocked that you're even talking to them. Mm-hmm. Go talk to your city council, county commission, whatever it is that, you know, there's different names for different states and different areas.
Mm-hmm.
If you can do that, run for city council, run for school board, run for whatever it is, or support someone else who is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? Your sheriff is the most powerful man in the land, because your sheriff, no joke. I mean, I don't know if you, if
yeah,
how much you know about
him. Yeah, I don't really know him. He's new, so I talk to my husband about that. I want to go meet him. So,
yes, you need to have a face-to-face. Take him out to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be blown away that you even care who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can talk to him about, hey, you know, we're concerned about what might happen from the feds coming down for our guns, and you talk to him, says, well, I don't know. I ain't even been paying attention to that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, gee golly. And you say, well, listen, you know, you're a rock star now, because you're going to stand up. Most people, and this is the thing where it comes down to psychology, there are five different personality types. And one is life sucks, one is life is getting better, the other one is, the third one is I'm great, the fourth one is, I believe, my friends and family are great, and the fifth one is life itself is great and a blessing from God. Most politicians are the third type of personality. They in their mind, what their personality is, I am great.
Mm-hmm.
You play to their emotions. I am great.
Mm-hmm.
Most politicians, they'll get out there and support anything as long as the people, their constituents, will tell them, hey, you're great. That's what they want to hear. They want to hear, I am great. So let them hear they are great. You go and you tell them, hey, look, you know, you come out and support this gun stuff, then everybody's going to say you're great. And they'll come out and they'll do it. You go and tell them, hey, go against Obamacare. We got a Tea Party group here, a Liberty group, but whatever it is. And you go tell them that, and you say, you're great. And they'll say, yes, you're darn right. I am great.
Yeah.
I'm great. And you got to play to that. You got to play to that. Whether it's good or bad or indifferent, that doesn't matter. You tell them they're great. You tell them the issues, why they're great, and they don't even really care most of the time. And as bad as that is, it's the facts. So get out there before somebody else gets out there and tells them that they're great for taking your guns.
Okay.
Again, it's like Brian, you'd like to chime in, and we'll move on to the call. And thank you again, Brian, for coming in and not feeling well. I want to put that out there, and thank you very much for coming in even under those circumstances. So go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. And, I mean, how can you top what Chuck just said there? No, that was great. Great analogy. But, you know, the one thing I wanted to say, I believe it's Mary, right?
Yes.
The one thing I wanted to say is, like, I hear the urgency in your voice, and I hear it in Robert's voice, and I hear it in Nicole's voice, and even Chuck. You know, there is a time limit there for those that are in the fold of the Republican Party, you know, as far as when that, you know, there's the sand is, ticking out. So, I mean, come 2014, November, we can't do anything about those rules. So, and they only meet, you know, three times a year, really. The fourth one is a party. So, you know, we have limited amount of opportunities to really have, you know, to replace or repeal or void out or whatever you're going to do with these rules. But, you know, if we don't stay vigilant as far as educating them, because in all honesty, I mean, listening to Mr. Smack, I mean, I appreciate him coming on. I appreciate him looking, you know, being so great to look at the rules, you know, but at the same token, I think that they have to just, you know, that's a, you know, a little bit of face value of what they hear or what somebody told them, rather than really picking it up and saying, okay, these are what our options are. And, oh my goodness, as Nicole's saying, we really don't have these options to blow up Rule 40. So how do we approach that? How can we do that? Well, there's only one real way, and that is to acknowledge that there's, you know, they were improperly passed, null and void. And whether you want to hold another convention, you know, or whatever it is that you guys decide to do, that's, you know, that's going to have to be on the table. You know, you cannot look at these any other way from outside of that viewpoint, at least from my own perspective. Everything else is just disingenuous. You know, you cannot validate anything that had occurred there. I was a national delegate. I was on the floor. I was one of the, I guess you would call them, lucky delegates that they just didn't cut out of our main delegation. You know, seven of them had been veterans. They were up in the stands. You know, we had a priest, a pastor, Native American, countless women, all in the stands. You know, so, you know, to watch those, not just the rules, that was one battle that we picked up. The first battle was to fight to get the whole delegation seated. And, you know, we were railroaded there. That, you know, that's a story for another time. But, you know, that was a sham. I mean, it really was a sham. So I think that, in all due respect, the only real way to go about ensuring that this won't happen in the future and that the right thing occurs would be to, you know, void out the, acknowledge that the rules were improperly passed, you know, at whatever level, and either null and void the business of that day or invalidate the entire convention.
That would be great, but I don't know how that, I mean, you know, who would be the strong, I guess, attorney.
Well, you know, one guy, I mean, Mark Willis, I'll give him all the credit in the world. He, you know, he helped me out quite a bit with my resolution here to restore the power of the grassroots here in Maine. You know, and that was, I think we could all agree, one of the strongest, you know, admonition or, you know, basically spankings that any state has passed towards rebuking the rule. And, you know, he isn't a practicing attorney, but, you know, he does have some legal background, and more than likely he'll be able to pick up that fight here on the RNC Rules Committee as well. They haven't chosen who will sit on the Rules Committee from here, but either, you know, Ashley Ryan or Mark Willis will probably sit on that committee. So, I mean, we do have some people that, you know, not only are they, you know, championing this cause, but, I mean, you know, 2 out of 166 people, he's 1 out of 100, you know, the 67 people that stood up against Ryan's previous at this recent election. And, you know, the world didn't end the next day, you know, and I think that after, you know, after the results of the 2012 election, you know, a lot of those RNC members, you know, they would have been doing their constituents a good favor by at least making him acknowledge that there was, you know, not a unanimous decision that, you know, you have to do better if you have the votes to win. But it's even more shameful that, you know, somebody, you know, and we can blame all of ourselves at every level for not getting involved because there was nobody else who stepped up to run, you know, that type of race. You have to start a year ahead. You know, when I approached Mark, we really only had about, you know, 6 weeks at best. So, you know, and I think that the impact that was made was ignominious. I mean, I think it definitely opened up some personal face-to-face encounters. I spoke to at least at least 100 or more, 140 RNC members, and some of the more influential ones. And you know, although I didn't get the results I really wanted to hear, I got the what they told me, in my own personal judgment, was at least more than I expected them to say. So, I mean, I look at it as there is progression, but again, each moment that passes, that sand is ticking and, you know, time's running out. And if it comes down to hoping that, you know, Rand Paul or whoever Paul or, you know, whoever, it doesn't even matter. I'm not even looking at that. If it comes down to hoping that we're going to change these at the next convention, we are all seriously mm-hmm. in for a ride. We need to jump off the unicorn, you know, stop farting rainbows, and really look at the situation
right.
and say, look, the time is out. They've effectively taken over the party completely, silenced you. I mean, this is like the last stand. You have, what, maybe 5 more meetings before November 2014, if we're lucky, to have these rules addressed in a way that's going to not affect or effectively silence any or, you know, disenfranchise any portion, any faction, or any ideology under the Republican Party.
No, you know, definitely. There's a point I was going to make, but I was working on something else and doing some multitasking here. But, Nicole, we haven't heard you for a bit. We've got about 20 minutes left of live time. We may or may not live time, recording time. Mm-hmm. We may or may not use all of it, and I appreciate all of you staying on as long as you have, and it was good to have Mr. Smack on. But Nicole, I'd like to bring the floor over for you for a bit, if there's anything you'd like to chime in on any of that.
Yeah, well, with Brian, with what you're saying about how we have until 2014 to address this, I don't even think that we have that long. I'm not even that optimistic about it, because I believe that the Rules Committee is going to make a decision about this at the April meeting. I think that they are, there's a lot of people who are willing to go along with Morton Black Love Amendment, and once that decision is made, whether it's in April or the next meeting after April, by the Rules Committee, I just don't think we're going to have any room to take it any further than that. If we start with, you know, start with getting a compromise type of situation, I think that's just going to kill the debate altogether. But Mary and Brian were both saying, with one point that you were making about needing or wanting somebody to take charge and be a leader, obviously Brian, Mark and Ashley are going to be, at the forefront of this. So maybe that's something that they can go ahead and kind of get the ball rolling on, as far as if they take a stance that they're not going to make their first go-to plan going through the Rules Committee, and if they take a stance and say, we are going to do this minority report and, you know, we want to caucus with the other committee members of the entire RNC body and get support behind this, then maybe that will, with, you know, the level of time that we have now, maybe that will get the ball rolling for people to step up here and there and then get more and more support, having something, a concrete plan to follow in that manner. And also I'm wondering why folks like Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, who potentially have some ambitions to run for the presidency, wondering mm-hmm. Why they're silent on this, because surely they know that this would affect such a run, unless they just think that they're going to be the establishment candidate. And, they have enormous audiences within the Republican Party. They could really help us in making headway on this. Why do you guys think that they're not even, we hear nothing from them? Mm-hmm. And other folks that potentially would run.
Yeah, even Newt Gingrich, who basically said that, you know, he was going to babysit Ryan, you know, over the next couple of years, you know, in North Carolina. You know, I would like to see some solutions put forward. I would like, you know,
right.
I'd like there to be a discussion. I think that it's only at face value at this point. I think that
mm-hmm.
there's limited understanding, you know, just mm-hmm. as if you are trying to pass some bill in Congress or as a state house, you know, there's limited understanding outside of what the title is. So I think that they really have to delve deeper into understanding the predicament and looking, you know, a couple years ahead and a couple years ahead of that, and maybe taking some hard look at some of the, the registrations of, you know, either independents or unregistrations of the Republican Party, and say, you know, we're going in the wrong direction if we hope to have any participation from Republicans nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'll tell you what, folks, I'm going to get ready to close some things out. It's been, it's been a great show, but we're coming up on it. And what I like to do is give everyone an opportunity to do some last-minute chiming in before I close things out. And so we'll go to Chuck first. And then we'll go to Mary, and then I think we'll Brian, and then close out with Nicole, and then I'll do some closing thoughts, and then we'll call it a night, and, you know, hope to talk to you guys later on sometime soon. So let's go ahead and start off with Chuck. Go ahead, Chuck.
Obviously I kind of sound like a broken record sometimes, but I'll do a shameless plug again. My website's constitutionalwar.org. If you can help fund anything that I'm doing, please do. I'm trying to go to the April meeting. If you don't want to go and you want to help someone else go, help me go. All right. Other than that, like I would say, contact your committee men, your committee women, your state chairman, your sheriff, your whatever, dog catcher, I don't care what it is. Talk to the guy at the gas station who likes your T-shirt that you're wearing. Get him involved. Get him. You know, tomorrow night is the precinct meeting here in Mecklenburg County, which I don't even live in anymore. I'm in Union County, North Carolina, and I'm doing everything I can to get more numbers over there to the Mecklenburg County GOP precinct meeting. Go to your precinct meetings. Become the chairman of your precinct. It literally is as easy as showing up and saying, a lot of times, not all the time, sometimes there's already a chairman in your precinct. Most precincts don't even have a chairman. A lot of times you'll be surprised. You'll walk in there and they'll be like, okay, where's your seat? You'll be over there at the little table where they put a bunch of people together. There's usually active precincts and then there's inactive precincts in bigger states. You sign up and automatically, without a single vote, you by yourself are the chairman of your precinct. You find other people in your precinct, you bring them out, and you become a caucusing party of your GOP, and now you can help advance the cause of liberty, small government, and constitutional conservatism. Wow, it's very easy. So do it. Do that. Do whatever you can. However little you think it is that you're doing, if you're doing something, you are an American hero. So do it. Contact your folks. Try to stand up for people like Todd Daniel Welch up there in Wisconsin, who got kicked out of the Dunn County Republican Party. Look for any issues like that going on. Stand up with your brothers in arms. Stand firm. fight with them, make the message known. If they're going to get attacked, make them a martyr. Get help them raise funds. If you, you know, Todd might need funds. I don't know. A lot of people in our movement that are good people have an issue asking for funds to help do what they do. Well, look, we all play our own role. Some folks have money but don't have time. Some folks have time but don't have money. We need to work together, make sure if transactions are occurring that you actually get some results for it, and just go full steam ahead in every single direction that you can possibly go. Go full steam ahead. Don't give up. If the Republican Party fails, it doesn't mean that we fail. We can still win even if the Republican Party falls flat on its face. The relationships that we build, the phone numbers and contacts and the bonds that we make are what's going to save this country. This country doesn't live or die on the Democratic and Republican Party. This country lives and dies on the country men and women throughout this nation and as founded. So thank you again for having me on, and you know, I'm game to come on just about any time that you want, man. So I appreciate it. Thank you much.
Well, thank you very much, and a lot of that was very well said. And we'll go to Mary. Okay. If you'd like any last things you'd like to chime in on.
Yes, I just, you know, quickly wanted to say thank you for Nicole, and I guess it was Brian that shared their experience at the RNC. That was very interesting. I mean, to, you know, hear firsthand from them an experience that they had there, you know, versus just seeing it on the videos. So I've really enjoyed that. And I just enjoyed the participation with y'all and Chuck, some of your advice. I have gone to the RNC, to our GOP rather, meetings here. And there is a precinct leader or someone that's, what did you have, leader? No, what a chairman. There is one in mine area, so I, you know, I couldn't run for that. But I have been going to those meetings, and I'll go tomorrow. But, you know, there is a Tea Party, and, you know, I wish that the Tea Party group groups, rather, could, you know, gather again and get some things
mm-hmm.
done, but, you know.
Like they did in 2010.
Yes. So maybe they will. Maybe they'll. I really feel with the Second Amendment and with the gun, trying to take our guns, I mean, I really feel like that is one thing that could really draw all the Tea Party together again. Because I think it's their feelings on that is pretty much the same across the board. So I'm hoping that that will happen again. So, but anyway, thanks for having me on.
Well, Finn, thank you very much for coming in, calling in, Mary, and of course you're always welcome. And speaking of gun controls, I'll chime in real quick on something. Is you can listen to a series of gun control topics and shows on the Coalition of Freedom. You could find that show on Blog Talk Radio. So check it out. It is on the political conservative section of Blog Talk Radio. So check it out. It's called Coalition of Freedom, which is of the same name as the Facebook page, Coalition of Freedom. Just go to your search engine in Facebook, just type in Coalition of Freedom, and you'll be able to find some links to some of those archives about you know, the attempts on gun control and things of that nature. I believe Chris has about 13 episodes for people can check out. And so please do. I suggest you do, especially if that's an issue that you are passionate about and interested in. And so we'll move on to, I believe, Brian, and then we'll finish up with Nicole, and I'll have a few parting words, and then we'll call it a night. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I just want to thank Barb Logic here, Political Talk. You guys do a great show, and thank you, Robert, for extending the invitation to me. I want to say it's great to hear
you
from Chuck again and from Nicole again. I know they're working hard in North Carolina and places nearby there. So, you know, keep up the good work there. And, you know, outside of that, you know, I hope that you know, the show reaches out to a bunch of people, and I hope people share it and, you know, and chime in on the next show. And with that, I'd love to say good night to all you guys.
Good night. Yes, definitely. For folks listening, it's either live, well, it's recorded now, or on the archives, definitely feel free to share the show on, you know, your websites or, you know, Facebook page or Twitter or anything of that nature. Because, of course, we don't want to just talk amongst ourselves. We do want to get this information out to conservatives and out to the grassroots to listen to all these folks such as yourself, Brian, and, you know, and Mark Willis and, you know, Nicole and, you know, Chuck and, you know, all you folks, what you've got to say and what you guys have going on. So by sharing these shows, you can you'll also be sharing what you guys have to contribute to the liberty, grassroots, and conservative efforts. So we'll go ahead and move on to Nicole. Thank you very much.
Nicole Rebels. I am with Carolina Liberty PAC, and anybody is welcome to follow what we're doing in North Carolina. We are basically, some of our biggest issues that we're focusing on this year will be on state level for North Carolina, obviously, but nullification, Second Amendment protections, and we'll be following a lot of what's going on within the RNC, being that that's the outlet that we're trying to work within at for now anyway. But also, I just want to really commend Brian for all the work that he has been doing, because I'm sure, I mean, obviously, Chuck and I wouldn't even be on this show discussing this issue if it weren't for Brian's efforts in outreaching to us to get our participation on the rules and inform us about what's going on with that. And if there's one person that has really been, you know, a leader in this issue to point to, then that would be Brian. And I just want to thank you also and Joe for giving us a forum to come on and talk about
anytime.
These things that and for having Mr. Smack on to have that dialogue with as well.
Great, great. Well, thank you very much. And for the folks out there, also check out, to give a little plug for the website, you go to www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com. See some of the folks during the election that we've interviewed here, for some of the third parties that we covered. Also, you can find some links.
Can I ask one question? Me and Nicole were talking about this earlier today. Can you tell us what Bard's Logic stands for?
Sure. Bard's, of course, is, you know, kind of a nickname I call myself, and, you know, because I consider myself kind of a jack of all trades, master of none sort of thing. So that's where the Bard's part comes from. And then logic is, you know, you go to a lot of talk shows and you hear, you know, people, you know, screaming over each other, you know, getting real. I mean, and I understand emotionalism, you know, gets involved in politics. But, you know, that brings a lot of people talking over and screaming over each other. And that's one thing I like to avoid on the show. That's why I try to keep things, you know, kind of in order. And so I like to think, you know, covering issues, you know, more through logic than through, you know, emotion, because you can see that, you know, in a lot of other venues. And, of course, political talk, we've talked mainly about politics here on the show. So that's, you know, kind of where I came up with the name Bard's Logic Political Talk.
Awesome. And Brian just said in the chat to remind Nicole, so I'll do it for her. If you can, and you got money, and you want to see things get done, send it Nicole's way, because she does it. And that website would be CarolinaLibertyPAC.com. And thanks, man. Anytime. Have me back on. And, you know, I appreciate everything that you're doing so much. So thank you, man.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
I do too, Robert. I love your show.
Well, great. Thank you. And I really appreciate you guys coming on. I do, you know, saying even on the website that this is the people show, the grassroots show, not necessarily, you know, my show, Robert's show. Yes, I do facilitate it, but I do like to keep it open for things such as this that really affects the We the People, the grassroots, and that's kind of the brand of the show is that. So I will finish off by saying, Def, another place to check out for folks, one place I'm passionate about, is to go to the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. You could find some buttons how to get there from the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And go there, and for only $50 a year, you can sponsor a baby elephant whose parents were killed by poachers. And it's part of my whole, you know, conservation. They have conservation efforts. And I definitely do consider myself a conservationist and environmentalist. And I will see that we've only got a few minutes left here, so I'd like to end tonight as I do most nights, and that is by a song by Aubrey Ashburn. You can listen to more of her music or examples of that at www.aubreyashburn.com. That's A-U-B-R-E-Y, Ashburn, A-S-H-B-U-R-N.com. Take care, everyone. Have a good night, and I look forward to speaking with you again. Take care. Thank you.